Ladies and gentlemen, the microphones have been turned on. The cameras will be rolling momentarily. It's my pleasure to gavel to order tonight's city council meeting.
Don't wave the cow.
No meeting.
Correction, special committee of the whole meeting first. Forgive me. I'll let the record show that all the aldermen, save for Dantino and Pawlak, are present this evening. Mr. Dantino did have a work emergency to deal with tonight, and Mr. Pawlak is trying to board a flight from, you'll love this, South Dakota to New York.
Oh.
So he was scheduled to join us, but because the airlines have messed up his schedule, he won't be with us. So we have a few items of business for this special committee of the whole. Item 2A is to consider resolution number 2010-61, authorizing signers for legacy treasury direct U.S. Treasury investment accounts for City of Geneva Cemeteries Endowed Care Account.
So moved.
Second.
Motion by Brown, seconded by Vogelsberg. Are there any questions or comments? Mr. Singer.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Who is it that will respond to this question?
Certainly, City Administrator McKittrick can.
Okay. All right.
Mr. Sorry. Mayor, I was going to, and Alderman Singer, if I may, I would like to take the opportunity to introduce our new finance officer.
Oh, fair enough. I didn't know we were going to do that right away. That's awesome.
She is with us and has proposed this item of business. Joan Rock and obviously Assistant City Administrator Stephanie Dawkins can fill in the blanks, but Joan is with us this evening. She comes to us.
Hello, everybody.
With a very lengthy background in municipal finance from River Forest, and before that, Hanover Park, and probably close to 20 years doing municipal finance, so we are very fortunate to have her, and this is her item of business on the agenda this evening.
Wonderful. Ms. Rock,
mm-hmm.
Welcome.
Thank you.
You have not had the pleasure yet of meeting all the council members formally.
No, I haven't.
So much to your dismay, these are them. So, and again, as City Administrator McKittrick indicated, Ms. Rock comes to us with extraordinary talent and dedication, and of course she perhaps enjoys most her commute, as she is a resident of beautiful St. Charles. So life is good. She's already made a considerable impact on the department as well, so welcome. Are there any questions for Ms. Rock regarding the cemetery fund? Alderman Singer?
Thank you. We did have the opportunity to meet some time ago.
Yes.
And it was a pleasure, and I'm so pleased to have you with us.
Thank you.
And I think you're going to work out. So, welcome to our city.
Thank you.
And I'm sure you're going to enjoy yourself here. Just quality people you're going to be working with.
Great.
Talented people. I'm sure you're aware of that.
Yes.
Thank you. How and what was the process used before we decided to go in this direction regarding the cemetery fund?
This is where the investments have always been held. We're just updating the signers. The signers were old. I think when I wasn't here, but I'm assuming when we took the cemetery over, this is where the accounts
okay.
were held. So it's just cemetery accounts that are held
I
there.
I see. Okay, thank you for that.
You're welcome.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
Yeah, I believe Mayor Harrington is still signing these things, so we need to update that. Mr. Marks.
Welcome on board first.
Thank
just
you.
One quick question. Is it we don't use dual signatures on checks out of accounts like this then? We just have one person authorized to sign, or what is the policy on that?
Two signatures.
It says or, not and. That's why I was questioning it. I mean, I didn't know, because it leaves you in there allowed to say and, but this has only an or signature as the way it's proposed. That was my question.
Okay. We normally do require two signatures.
Then we would probably need to change this to
say and.
Yeah. Okay. So if
we can make that change and that'll be prepared for the time.
I think we just need to just probably approve it that way, I would think.
Yeah, we'll approve it that way, and then we can have the final document reflect that.
That's fine.
Absolutely.
I'm fine if they just want to change their motion.
If the
motioner agrees with the change.
And the seconder as well?
Yep.
Great. Anything else for Ms. Rock? That's the toughest question you're going to get tonight.
Yeah, well,
that's pretty
hey.
Good.
Okay.
We have a motion by Brown, a second by Vogelsberg, all in favor of the motion on item 2A, including the recommendation by Mr. Marks, which is included in the main motion. Please indicate by saying aye.
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 Anyone opposed? Item 2B Consider resolution number 2010-62, authorizing signers for legacy Treasury direct U.S. Treasury investment accounts for City of Geneva Cemetery's new development account.
I make the same corrected motion.
Same. Second.
Same corrected motion is noted, seconded by Alderman Marks. Let's bring up Ms. Rock and question her again. Any questions? Any comments? All in favor of item 2B, please indicate by saying aye.
Aye.
Anyone opposed? Any abstentions? Item 2C, consider 2009-10 carryover budget amendments to 2010-11.
So move.
Second.
Singer makes the motion. Hill makes the second. Questions or comments regarding the carryover recommendations? Seeing none, hearing none, all in favor of item 2C, please indicate by saying aye.
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 Anyone opposed? Any abstentions? Item 2D, consider resolution number 2010-63, authorizing execution of sealing and abandonment of well number 3, located at 620 Logan Avenue.
Move approval.
Second.
Hill makes the motion. Flanagan makes the second. We have Mr. Van Gescom with us tonight. Any questions for our superintendent? Again, we are closing well number 3 and no longer providing water to our citizens for the remainder of this summer. Alderman Marks?
But Bob, have we looked at all into what we're going to do with this building? Because we're taking the alternative now of not knocking it down right away, and there could be some added costs if they can't pull the pump easily enough, at least from what I read, correct?
Correct. Mary, would you like to address that?
Yes.
I know we had talked about it at one point, but I don't know if we had any update.
We are actually working with the school district on the regarding the property as well as the structure.
Oh, okay, so they're interested in the structure.
They are.
Okay, fine.
Yes, and they actually asked if that could remain. So we are working out the details of an IGA with them on that. And right now we're looking to get a survey done of the property. So we've got to sort through all of the red tape, if you will. But as soon as that is finished, then we should have that intergovernmental agreement to you.
Okay, that's fine.
Any other questions for Mr. Van Gescom?
Mr. Mayor?
Yes. Dr. Brown.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I might follow up on that question. Are we talking about just the house or some of the additional property? Because I know the school board had talked about some parking there. So when we make the transfer, are we considering the possibility of some of the property around the building?
We are looking at the easterlymost property of the site. There's actually two sites that we've used together. It's the most easterly portion of that, with the most westerly portion remaining, obviously, for the city's access to the tower, and it would remain our property. So,
thank
but
you.
We will be bringing those details right. to you, I should, obviously.
I would hope that we keep open the possibility that in the future we reach some agreement on that, because they will no doubt be looking to expand parking once the present recession is over. Thank you.
Anyone else? We have a motion and we have a second. All in favor of item 2D, please indicate by saying aye.
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 Anyone opposed? Any abstentions? Item 2E, consider resolution number 2010-64, rejecting 2010 tree trimming project bids and authorizing for a rebid process.
So move.
Second.
Singer makes the motion, and we'll give it to the lady in black, Vogelsberg. Thank you for wearing the same color as Flanagan tonight.
You're welcome.
We try.
That'll make them talk to each other.
It's amazing, isn't it? Questions or comments as to why we are rejecting these bids, which is explained, of course, in the memorandum. All in favor of item 2E, please indicate by saying aye.
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 Anyone opposed? Any abstentions? Great. We'll save new business for the council meeting unless anyone objects. Therefore, I'll entertain a motion to adjourn this special committee of the whole meeting.
Move. Second.
Hill makes the motion. Singer makes the second. All in favor, please indicate by saying aye.
Aye.
Anyone opposed? Great. We're going to jump right into the city council meeting unless anyone objects.
Nope.
We will defer to the city clerk and wait for his availability. Awesome. Tonight's City Council meeting is called to order. I will kindly ask our city clerk to please take the official roll call.
Chuck Brown.
Here.
Ralph Dantino. Dorothy Flanagan.
Here.
Sam Hill.
Here.
Craig Maladra.
Here.
Richard Marks.
Here.
Ray Pollock. Robert Piper.
Here.
Ron Singer.
Aye.
Don Vogelsberg.
Here.
Fantastic. We begin our city council meeting with a Pledge of Allegiance, and we always select the person who entered the room last to lead us in that pledge. And the city treasurer, Pat McQueenie.
That's good.
Pledge of Allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you, City Treasurer. Welcome. There was a unanimous vote of the Committee of the Whole meeting to eliminate the City Treasurer's position. So that'll be our first order of business at the Council level. Maybe. Special items and presentations. We have two this evening. Our first, item 3A, is an update on the Northeastern Illinois Regional Water Supply and Demand Plan and sub-regional water planning activities. We have a very special guest with us this evening, Mr. Peter Wallers of EEI, Environmental Engineering Incorporated, located in the beautiful town of Sugar Grove, Illinois. Mr. Wallers, welcome.
Thank you and good evening. You may recall I was here in February of 2008 to give an update for you all on the activities of the Regional Water Supply Planning Group. And what I'd like to do this evening is give you the follow-up on that. The plan has been issued. I'd like to give you some background and a summary of the plan that was issued, and then really some exciting news on water planning activities in the region, which I hope you'll enjoy. This is a copy of the plan. It was issued March 22, 2010. It's a culmination of about 3.5 years of work from our regional water supply planning group. The plan is to analyze supply and demand for the 11-county area, which is shown on this screen, into the year 2050. And so as you might expect, that's a fairly daunting task. Some of the reason why it took some 3.5 years to get to the end of the rainbow. Our group was comprised of 35 members, 10 of which were municipal suppliers, and they were primarily represented by the councils of government in the area. And I was a delegate from Metro West Council of Government, along with Mayor Wisner from Aurora. So we were the two representatives for Metro West who represent City of Geneva. There were 11 county reps represented, and then we had a variety of other special interest groups that were on the group. And so we had a 35-member committee. And as you might expect, it was a little bit unwieldy at times, but we managed to get through things. One of the first things that our group did was commission a study to actually compute the demand, the water demand, over the period from 05 to 2050. And that was done as a subcontractor from Southern Illinois University. And their study indicated that in the year 2050, the region, the 11-county region, would be about 12 million population, starting at about 8.5 million. So a substantial amount of population in a substantial regional area. And I should also mention this was one of two plans that were done in the state. There were pilot studies. This one is the most populous area. This was the 11-county Chicago metro area. They also did a central Illinois study on the Mahatan Aquifer, so, and that's down in Champaign area. Early on, the study did two things. One, it computed the population that would be in the region, in the 11-county region, but it also forecasted the water demand that we would see with that that population. And this was probably one of the more significant findings of the study when we got into this, in that we started to map three different futures. And if you can note that the center line here is basically business as usual. And if that was the case in the year 2050, we'd be using about 2 billion gallons of water a day for our 11-county region. But if we took a path, a slightly different path, and went with some water conservation on this less resource-intensive path, we would be down to about 1.6 billion gallons per day. So a 400 million gallon per day savings of water, so a significant amount. And if we chose a more intensive path, then obviously we would be at 2.4. And so what we started to realize right from the beginning was the impact that individual water use and regional water use has, you know, per capita, per industry, things like that. So that became a focal point of some of our initial discussions, and as you'll see later, why water conservation started to enter into our discussions early on. The study area is comprised of really three distinct types of water supply. The blue, the light blue area here is the Lake Michigan supplied water supply. The darker green is a groundwater supplied, and then we have the inland surface water, which would be like the Fox River, for example. When we look at that from a regional standpoint, about 70% of our region is supplied by Lake Michigan. So that's an important element. As you can see there, that's about a billion gallons a day that comes out of Lake Michigan at this time. Groundwater, 250 million gallons per day, another substantial amount. And then, of course, we have local rivers, which is about 14%. Now, there's quite a bit of self-supplied business and makeup water for power plants that comes out of the local river component. Only about, 10 or 11 million gallons a day comes out, or 18 million gallons a day comes out of the local rivers. So it's not a significant for public supply right now, but it is a significant water supply and likely would be a source in the future. We started to learn about all three of these water sources, and some of the I'm sure you're familiar with the story of the Chicago River, the change in the flow of the Chicago River in the early 1900s. Chicago had significant pollution problems. Water from the stockyards was flowing into Lake Michigan, so they reversed the flow of the rivers and created the diversion of Lake Michigan. And why that is significant is that it now limits the amount of water that can be withdrawn by Illinois from Lake Michigan. And that was is why it's now referred to as the diversion. We diverted water to the Mississippi watershed. So we're limited by Supreme Court decree to about 3,200 CFS, which is roughly about 2 billion gallons a day of water, which seems like an awfully tremendous amount of water, but it is fixed, and it's not going to be increased. It's a culmination of a multi-state treaty and including Canada. So that's not going to change. So we learned that we've got a limitation on the water that we're going to be able to get from Lake Michigan. And I'll talk about it a little bit later as we go into the presentation. But of that, about 60% of Lake Michigan water is used for domestic supply. And any water that falls within the 673 square mile area that used to drain to Lake Michigan but now drains to the Mississippi. So if we have a large storm in Chicago, that water goes into the combined sewers, is treated and discharged in Mississippi. It counts against our diversion. So that's why about 28% is runoff. So just to give you a flavor that that supply, while tremendous and supplies a great deal of our region, is limited. Probably more important to the city of Geneva and our Metro West area is groundwater. We rely on it. Most of the communities rely heavily on that. Couple things. The deep aquifer, which is the sandstone, deep sandstone, both the St. Peter and the Ironton-Galesville, is a regional aquifer. You can see the extent of that resource. So it's not just one county or two counties. It spans all 11 of our counties. King County recently did a study in cooperation with the State Water Survey and the Illinois State Geological Survey, and they initiated a local model to try to better model that resource. And then the Regional Water Supply Planning Group took that model and then expanded it for the 11-county region. So we now have a regional deep sandstone aquifer model that allows the State Water Survey to model withdrawals in that formation. And some of the things that they did initially, and I think you may have seen this slide already, but if we just use the 2002 pumping rates and extend those in the model, what we start to see is a mining of the deep aquifer, meaning that we're taking more water out than can be replenished into that aquifer. So you continually lower that water level. So what you see is two areas that are highlighted, the pumping centers around Aurora and Joliet, but it's just kind of an indication of a overuse of a resource. So now we've looked at the deep aquifer, we have some indication that we have a little bit of overuse on that aquifer. Another early report that we got, and I think this is another one that led us to the conclusion that some water conservation was going to be an early activity that would be meaningful for the region. This shows, again, that there's a sustained yield in that aquifer of about 80 million gallons per day. And right now, even at the 2002 rate, it's being mined. As we move forward in time, if we take the low or the least use avenue, we see that we have a lot less water use and a lot less mining. If we keep it at a high pumping rate, we mine that aquifer a little bit more. So it starts to, again, indicate that we need to be watching what we're doing because we're exceeding that that overwithdrawal. And you can see that this happened once before, and the solution then was to open up Lake Michigan for the suburbs. So that's when DuPage County and many of the other suburbs got Lake Michigan water. They all came off, that population came off the deep aquifer, pumping rates went down, water levels recovered, and things were fine. But what we're seeing with the growth out west during the last 5-7 years is now we're starting to mine the aquifer again. So again, another indication that there's another source that has a little bit of finite levels to it. And it's not to say that we have an emergency. We don't. What we do have is something that we need to plan for. So I want to stress that. The other resource that we rely on quite a bit is called the shallow sand and gravel, or the shallow aquifers can also be the shallow limestone. This is the map that was developed as part of the county study in Kane County. And the picture is not quite as clear for the shallow sand and gravel. It's less connected than the regional aquifer, so it's harder to model. It's harder to map. And so this just gives you a flavor for what is out there. These are showing some of the different locations where we have sand and gravel deposits with likelihood of having water in them. I know that Geneva is fortunate to be able to withdraw from one of the more productive sand and gravel aquifers. This represents about the best information we had in the 11-county area. A lot of the other counties don't have this level of information, so trying to assess all those shallow supplies to determine what the real quantity of water that can be derived from them was very difficult. So Kane County's in a good position. We have good mapping. Some of the other counties, McHenry and Kendall, are now having studies that are underway, so they'll have better information. But it's an area that needed more study. So we have good mapping in Kane, but there's other counties that we didn't have such good mapping. One other area of potential supply was the inland rivers. And our group, the State Water Survey and the Geological Survey were, for lack of a better term, our technical advisory group. And they had flow information on the Fox River, and that was the one that they studied. We didn't have information, for example, on the Kankakee or other major rivers in our 11-county region. So this is representative that we will likely be able to withdraw more water from the river. And what you see on this exhibit, and it's a little bit interesting in some respects, is that we have a certain base flow in the river. As we extract groundwater, send it out to the public, and they use it, put it back, and we put it into our wastewater treatment plants and put it back into the river, we actually raise the base flow of the river. So that the river flow actually goes up because of the groundwater withdrawals and the treatment of that water. So we start to see an increase in the base flow of the river, and ironically that will allow us to extract more water in certain areas for water supply. So the two dips that you see, the one in Elgin is where they extract water, and then when it goes back up, it's where they put it back in. Similarly, in Aurora, they do the same thing. So you see there are two communities in this area that are taking a significant amount of water out of the Fox River, and that's a renewable resource, obviously, so that's a good thing. So, but there is a limit to that withdrawal as well. There are a point, if you go below, you'll start to impact the the folks that use the water, but also the critters that are in the river and the impact to that. So the state water, or the DNR, has set a 7-day, 10-year low flow regime as being the amount you can't go below and extract water. So that means during a drought, there may be restrictions on what you could withdraw from the river. So again, limits to that resource as well. So we start to see that each one of our resources out there, while abundant, has some limitations and restrictions to it. So you have to be cognizant of that. So some of the key findings was that we needed to have more study on the shallow aquifer. As I mentioned, we just didn't have good data in all the different counties. We wanted some additional modeling of the deep aquifer to continue with using better population data as it starts to come in. As anyone knows, when you start to predict the future, your crystal ball is only as good as the last few days. So it's pretty hard to predict into the year 2050. So we'd like to continually monitor that. And then the effects of the stream withdrawals are really not known. We know there's an impact, but not knowing exactly what it is. So some additional work is needed in those areas. In addition, as I mentioned, all the elements of water supply are limited. There's no unlimited resource out there, and that's probably pretty obvious. One of the things we concentrated on early was that conservation is needed. And the idea being that water supply in our region is an economic driver. We have abundant, relatively low-priced water, excellent quality, and we didn't want to lose that economic advantage. So by doing some work now, we can start to continue to have that advantage going forward. So conservation is one way to do that. So we use less water doing the things that we want to do. And lastly was the need for a little more regionalized planning. There's two, what the report observed, I guess, was that municipalities were planning by themselves singularly and not looking at these resources on a regional basis. And in reality, the aquifers don't know where the boundary is between communities. So there's an impact to your neighbor. And so regional planning, we thought, was a very important element. So why is the 2050 plan any different? Now, many of you may not know this, but there's been many, many studies out there that have been on the same topic over the years, and these are just a few of the ones that are out there. And I would submit that there's been three changes, I believe. First, this was really the first stakeholder-driven report, and meaning that the people, the municipalities, were involved, and I think that was an important component for that. The second part, and I'll talk a little bit more about this in a second, is that the water suppliers started to get the message that, you know, we need to do a little more comprehensive planning here. And lastly, one of our silver bullets has already been used. So we've already accessed Lake Michigan. We're not going to be able to do that again. So DuPage County solved their problem by accessing Lake Michigan. We don't have that same ability. Now, there will be some waters available from Lake Michigan diversion that can come west, but not to the extent that it was back in the days when DuPage Water Commission was formed. Early on, Metro West saw the importance of planning more regionally, and they basically commissioned a water conservation task force. And as I mentioned, we kind of picked up on the water conservation theme because we felt like that was some low-hanging fruit that we needed to start looking at right away. And some of the things that we looked at were having a consistent measuring program where we would report on our water use amongst the communities in a similar fashion. So we adopted the Lake Michigan Users Form, water form. We had an exchange of community information, so we have like all of the water conservation ordinances in a repository. So we learned from what everybody else had done and started cataloging that information. And then we were concentrating certainly on conservation, education, that sort of thing, because we felt like we needed to get the word out. Well, also part of that activity and through the regional water supply led to reaching out to other councils of government in other areas. And we formed by reaching out, we formed a what's called the Joint COGS Municipal Water Supply Planning Alliance. And that was about 75 communities, five different councils of government. And that started the planning for a little bit more of a regional approach on water supply planning. We adopted four simple principles. We wanted to have similar resources and geographic boundaries in our planning group area. We felt like initially we wanted to have primarily water suppliers as being the lead agencies because they have the investment and they provide water to everyone. So they have the expertise, the experience, and the commitment. And everyone felt strongly that education would be an important component to whatever we did. And then lastly, we wouldn't reinvent the wheel. So we tried to just move from those four principles. We looked at our region again, and we isolated out the Lake Michigan users, mainly because their challenges are different than what we felt like some of the other sub-regions would be. They have already, in some respects, done a better job in accounting for their water than many of us have, and they have different challenges. We're looking at a different type of resource. So we felt like it was good to identify them, but and knowing that they would probably be part of any discussion in terms of alternate supply would be important, but not in the planning group activities. So then we started to look what might be some common threads that we could see, and we started focusing on the river basins and kind of focused on the Fox River and the Kankakee, and we then split into what we call the Northwest Water Planning Area and the South Water Planning Area. So it's not exact science, but we have about a five-county area that we're moving towards a voluntary planning group to help move water conservation and water planning issues forward. And Metro West would be an important part of that group, representing three counties, DeKalb, Kane, and Kendall counties, and then McHenry and Lake would be the other counties. And again, we've excluded the Lake Michigan users. And then we set a future area, South Water Planning Area. The idea was that our group, the Northwest Water Planning Area, would be kind of the pilot group, and we'd get it off the ground. The actual groups that are going to be forming that sub-regional voluntary group are five councils of government and the five counties. So we've engaged the county board chairs and the councils of government to work together to form, a voluntary group so that we can bring sub-regional water issues to the table and move the ball forward. So we're excited about bringing that forward and getting this level of cooperation. To date, we've got resolutions of support from many municipalities. We're working with the counties. We're actually almost past that stage now. We're coordinating with CMAP. We want to have them as a partner for our group. We think they're an important liaison between the Lake Michigan users and the non-Lake Michigan users. And then we will have an intergovernmental agreement that will be the final document that'll form that group between the counties and the COGS, and we hope to have that done in July and as late as September, but of this year. So we're making really good progress on that. So why do we think this voluntary planning can work, and you know, why do we think it's important? Well, it's bottom up as opposed to top down. What we saw at the regional water supply planning group was a lot of folks wanted the state to form a commission and then dictate to the municipalities how to operate their water systems. And that really wasn't too palatable to the municipal suppliers that were on the board. So that message kind of was received, and we said, you know, I think there's a better plan out there. And then this is the grassroots that started. As I mentioned, the suppliers have the investment and the economic incentive. I think everybody will recognize that water is an important element to all of us and, you know, industry, commercial, and our residents for sure. And lastly, again, I think the timing is right because of the fact that now is the time to plan for the future. If we wait, it becomes a crisis. If we can plan now, it's something that we can manage and work together on. So it just makes a lot of sense, and we think voluntary is the way to go. because through good education and dialogue, I think we can make people understand that what we're proposing is not going to significantly impact folks. And we just think there's some things, simple things that we've done, some attitudes that can be changed and move forward. So with that, I'd be happy to take any questions.
Thank you, Mr. Wallers. I'm certain there are a number of questions, and I have a couple as well, if I may. But anyone from the audience, any questions at all about our thirsty world slash region from the dais? Mr. Singer.
Thank you, sir. Mr. Wallers, is it too far-fetched to sort of reach out into the Mississippi River or the Illinois River?
I don't think it's Illinois River is not too far-fetched. I think it's more of an issue of cost. And that would be within our watershed, so we wouldn't be diverting water out of it. Our water from the Fox goes into the Illinois, so I think it would be appropriate to bring that water up. But I think you'll find is that it's just going to make water a little bit uneconomical. Mm-hmm. So for now, I would say it would be better to conserve what we have and use our inexpensive water while we can. And then at some point in the future, we may be forced to go down that road.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, sir. Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
You're welcome. Anyone else from the dais? Alderman Flanagan.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Just a quick question on those aquifers. You said that they weren't being replenished, but will they be? Or do you feel that there's just a slowdown of the replenishing happening? Or I know there's a crystal ball that you really can't.
Right. No, what we found is that the State Water Survey has determined that about 80 million gallons per day is what's called the sustainable yield. So when you exceed that, you start to take more water than can be replaced. Okay. The aquifer is a vast sandstone that has got a lot of little holes in it, and it holds water like a sponge. Mm-hmm. And so there's a big reservoir of water down there that we can extract water from a long time, but the level keeps going down. So if we could get back to using less than 80 million gallons a day, then we would start to see water levels come up. But right now, we're not doing that.
Thank you.
Anyone else on the dais? Mr. Wallers, I think some folks might find interesting, and perhaps even on the council as well, I've often been asked the question, why can't Geneva pull water from Lake Michigan? And the obviously the answers are varied, but the one perhaps most telling answer is the cost. I mean, am I correct in assuming that the latest study I saw had that figure somehow 5 to 6 times as much per cubic feet as we are paying now if we were to draw from Lake Michigan?
That wouldn't surprise me, and I'll just kind of quickly go through the process.
Okay.
There's a limit on the amount that can be withdrawn,
right,
but there is available capacity right now. But typically the thing that will defeat that is the cost, because you have to get it from Chicago out to the suburbs,
right.
Okay? So let's go back to DuPage County. They had to drill tremendous, tunnels and pipelines to get it out, and it cost a considerable amount of money, and that was to furnish water to that group. If others wanted to bring it out, we would have to do a similar thing. We'd have to get a tunnel or a pipeline, to bring that water out. Now, there's going to be a certain amount that could be piggybacked onto those existing pipelines and supplies. So I think DuPage Water Commission may have a bit of capacity left over. But it's really the cost of delivery.
Sure.
It's not the fact that the water's fairly inexpensive, but it's getting it, the 50, 60 miles out is the thing.
Okay.
So.
And secondly, I'm not certain if you had the opportunity to witness the excitement we had here a few months ago regarding water rates.
Always a fun topic.
Isn't it fun? In fact, your name was used several times in vain. It was unbelievable.
Okay.
In light of the discussion we've had here and other communities have had, and as you no doubt understand, other communities, Yorkville and elsewhere, have also adjusted their rates, what is the yin and yang between the conservation that you're calling for or that we're calling for on a regional basis and the anticipated rate structure moving forward?
Yeah, and that's a difficult problem, and it's really community by community. But I have a slide here that I think might give you you know, I look at water conservation in two different types of things. One, and it will speak to your rates, it might be a little bit long, but I think it's important. If you can replace your toilet from the maybe a 5 gallon per flush toilet, you can save a considerable amount of water, and this is a graphic from AWWA. That's something you can have people change without changing their habits. So, you know, you're still using the toilet the same amount, but you're saving water. We have other things like outdoor irrigation, which become more of a change in behavior that are more difficult. Okay, so now you're trying to shape someone's behavior, and that's a little more difficult.
Is that a Sugar Grove neighborhood by any chance, Mr. Waller? Is that photo?
That actually is.
It's not your neighborhood, is it?
It's in Montgomery.
Is
so
it okay?
That is my neighborhood, though.
Well,
so, and you'll see this quite a bit. In fact, it's interesting. The DuPage Water Commission started an ambitious program to conserve water, and they set up a program. They're trying to save 1% per year for 10 years. And what they found is that most communities had even odd watering, and people felt like they were obligated to water on their even or odd day. So, and I think most of you know that, you know, watering a lot is inefficient. What you want to do is put down a lot of water at one time and then not water again for a period of time. But anyway, there's a lot of inefficiencies in what we do. But what I wanted to get to was this slide, which I think kind of tries to give you some of the benefit of water conservation. And what happens is this is your growth curve in your water use. There comes a point in time when the capacity of your water work system will intersect that point, okay? When that happens, you have to then improve your water system, so add a well or add treatment. And you have an expense based on that population growth, right? If you embark on a water conservation program now, you start to lower that consumption baseline. And so what happens is your capacity intersects that point out into the future, all right? So now you've deferred a cost, and when you need to increase your capacity, because you've lowered that demand, you don't have to build that well as deep or I mean, it doesn't have to have as much production, or your water plant could be smaller, or your towers could be smaller. So you save capital costs. So, Mayor, what happens is if you can conserve water in the future, there's a benefit to capital cost. You will lower your capital cost. But that's something that you won't see right away. So that's a deferred benefit that you'll see. So in the meantime, though, it's difficult because you've got less revenue coming in. You've still got a lot of fixed costs. You have to pay for those costs. So the irony then becomes that you have to raise rates to balance your budget. And that's unfortunately a reality. And I would just say that I think in the Midwest in general, our water rates are very low. And while I know that causes some pain, it's somewhat unavoidable because you won't see those benefits for conservation until out into the future. So you have to balance your budgets. I think people understand that. The reason to conserve water is because it's the right thing to do. It's a limited resource. We need to keep it as an advantage to this area, I believe. And so by everybody doing that, yes, you're maybe not saving money. Maybe you're spending the same amount on your water bill, but hopefully you're using less water per capita. So I don't know if I absolutely answered your question, but
certainly helpful. Thank you very much. Any comments or questions from Mr. Wallers? Anyone from the audience? This is just an update. There's no action needed. You know, I was whispering to City Administrator McKittrick that I think EEI probably is home to some of the smartest people that we ever have the pleasure of working with. So,
well, I thank you for
thank
that.
You very, very much, and give Mr. Talsma our regards as well.
I will do that.
Thank you, Mr. Wallers.
Thank you.
And ticket those people in your neighborhood.
Okay.
Yeah.
Water on the side.
I have a question, Mr. Mayor,
sure,
on water conservation.
Absolutely.
Mr. Van Gieskum still here? Probably is.
Yes, he is. Mr. Van Gieskum is here.
Do we have an active water conservation program for the general public, flyers or videotapes or whatever you...
We have done extensive programs in the past several years as far as getting the message out through newsletters, through actions as far as renting one of those signboards that you see, like what's along Caneville Road right now for the road construction project. We will put those messages up there occasionally. But like I said, newsletters, things in the newspapers as far as what our conservation ordinance is. In the past several years, we've had our people go out and monitor those ordinances and conservation ordinance and write up ordinance tickets. The code enforcement officer is always out there and doing his work also.
Great. Thank you very much, Bob. Mm-hmm. Thank you, Mayor.
Thank you, Alderman Hill. City Administrator McKittrick.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I just wanted to make the council aware that Superintendent Van Gascom does sit on the Metro West Water Task Force as well. He is a member of that and keeps us informed of those activities. Also, just another kudos and thank you to Pete Wallers. I know he sits on my legislative committee as well, attends those as well as the Water Task Force meetings for Metro West, and has been just invaluable to Metro West as far as his expertise and also for serving on the Regional Planning Committee and bringing back information to us as it relates to water usage, the study, conservation, legislation. It's just been very helpful, and we really appreciate his expertise. Thank you, Mayor.
Thank you again, Mr. Wallers. And if you need to sneak out, we certainly understand. So we'll make certain the cameras aren't following you out the door, but we'll make sure. Our featured city department presentation. Ladies and gentlemen of the council, you know that we also or always invite a department head to join us periodically to give us an update on what the heck they're up to, not only for our benefit, but for the benefit of those who provide the revenue for the services to take place. And it's our pleasure tonight to welcome to the podium the
stun gun.
Fire department.
What took us so long?
The chief of the fire. Chief, how long have you been chief now? 20-something years.
No, about 14.
Yeah, whatever.
So you're close.
But you've been on the department 29?
36.
Mother of God. And your name is Steve?
There you go.
And he's only 40 years old?
Yeah, unbelievable. Welcome, Chief. Belated Happy Father's Day.
You're welcome. All right, thank you. Last, if you remember a year ago when I was here, I showed you how we collected data from the field reports, and we used that for our planning and evaluation of our services. Tonight, I'm going to show you what we do on the operations side with that same data. And first off, last year we showed you, as an example with GIS, and that a lot of what we do is GIS-based. As a point of reference, last year we showed you how we take data like this, which is the number of occupancies we have ranked by risk. So we have maximum, high, moderate, and low. But when you take that data and put in a map like that, it makes a lot more sense. It gives you an overall picture of what's going on in the community. So this is our risk analysis map. It's up to date through the end of last year. Now, when we go to respond on an incident, the firefighters use the GIS layers that we're talking about, and the way it starts out was if they have terminals in the vehicles, MDTs are called, and the first scene or screen that they will see is something like this. It'll show them, in this case, it's power packaging on Pillsbury Drive. And it gives them the address, the cross streets of where they're going to. In this particular case, down in the bottom line there, it says, notify us that this is a target hazard premise. We have several of those identified, and that's a cue for a larger response than for other occupancies. The next screen that they will get when they click on it is they will get the footprint of the building outlined in red, or in this case filled in red, and then it'll show them the street route to it. And at the top of the page, you can see where it shows ammonia is on site. There's carbon dioxide in the building along with some smaller amounts of sulfuric acid. So those are warnings to the firefighters, the company officers, the command officers as they're responding. Now, also, just the other thing that shows up in this are the red dots which are the fire hydrants around there. That helps be able to start planning where you're going to connect for water. Now, across the top, you see several tabs there, and this is just one of them. It shows, again, the materials that are in the building. The other tabs have issues or information related to the fire suppression system, detection systems, special hazards, type of construction, contact lists, and the basic information we need on a regular basis there at the incident. We can also turn on what we call an ortho view, and this would look sort of similar to what you've seen in maps here at City Hall that give us an overhead view of the site and its layout and any kind of exposures. And along with that, about 2 years ago, we were able to arrange to take aerial photography, photos rather, of properties throughout Geneva. We did about 300 different occupancies. Now that's been rolled into the computer database that's on the vehicles, so the guys can pull that up as they go. And I can't do it here, but on the screen and engines, we can zoom in very close on this. Mm-hmm. It's a high-resolution picture. And then finally, there was a blueprint or a diagram of the interior of the building showing the hazards, point of access, egress, and this will go on for several pages, typically. What we've done over the last 12 years now, is when a building permit is issued, or more to the point, when an occupancy permit is issued, we ask the developer or the architect to send us the drawings for the property on a disk, and then that we can load it right into the system. Now, earlier I had shown you where the red dots are, where the fire hydrants are. And the way that occurred is a lot of that information was developed by as-built drawings from the engineers and from the developers. After they built the development, they'd say, well, here's where we put the hydrants. And that information is put over the database of GIS. Well, the two don't always match up because the first isn't really anchored into latitude and longitude coordinates as a GIS map is. So in this instance here, this is a section of town. If you notice, if you can see it, the red dots are in the middle of the street. Right. Now, we know the hydrants aren't in the middle of the streets, but we also know that in severe storms, weather, like snowstorms, or at night, when the maps tells us and the computer screen tells us that there's a hydrant over at this location, and it's not because it's actually off by 50 or 60 feet, it creates some difficulties. So what we've been doing in the last few weeks is working with Public Works. We've sent staff out to identify or locate each hydrant with a Trimble GPS unit. It downloads the data, the coordinates for it, and then that's uploaded into the base map. So what this map shows you in this same street, the red dots are where it was, the white dots are where we found it. And there's a difference of 50 to 60 feet in that. And that's not true throughout the whole city, but that's just a sample of what we're seeing. So this has an advantage of supporting the water department needs for knowing where their systems are. And it helps us a lot so that we know where the stuff is when we need it for a response. So this is another way that we're using GIS in our regular daily operations. Now, when you get into field resources, a lot of times you're asked, well, what kind of equipment does the fire department have? What are the tools? What are the trucks used for? So I thought I'd go through that very quickly tonight. Now, everybody knows what a pumper is. It's class. That's what fire department does. You go to a fire, get out the hose, put out the fire. We also do hazardous materials. This is a trailer that we have, and this is historically carried our technical rescue equipment and our hazardous materials equipment. This is a response we had at Del Norte Hospital in March. And this is the technical rescue equipment we have that is also on the trailer. When it's all put in there, it gets a little crowded inside there, to say the least. Another item that's carried, we have three of these. These are called thermal imaging cameras. This is one of them. These are used by the firefighters when they are enter a structure. It allows you to see through smoke because it's looking for the thermal signature of the fire, or in this case, a victim that's in the fire. And since then, we've found a lot of other uses for it. It's good for looking for hidden fires in walls, a variety of situations. What it doesn't work on is water or on glass. So if you look at the window, you would see just black. But if you point it at somebody, you'll see their heat signature on it.
Sam doesn't show. Oh, Jesus.
Oh, not Jesus.
We were able to obtain three of these, two by grants and then one by a donation. Then the rolling stock of the department, we have engine 204. This is a 1984 pumper. It's a reserve engine. There's engine 205. This is out of station one. It's about 10 years old. It's just crossing the 10 years. It's just going into 11 years old, excuse me. This is truck 206. It's, again, it's station one. It's purchased in 1994, the same time we opened station two. This is engine 207. It was purchased in 1989. This carries a lot of extrication equipment, rescue equipment. I'm sure you've seen it when it's responding with the ambulance. It runs in response with the ambulance a lot. This is engine 208, which is quartered out at station two. It's just 8 years old. Here's engine 209, just turned 20. And then if you look at the 20-year mileage projection, when I first started with the department, as we've already determined, it was a while ago, we didn't put a lot of miles on the vehicles. And now looking at our 20-year projection, we're looking at, as an example, for the engine out at station 2, it'll be upward in 120,000-mile range, which is quite a bit. And this is just a snapshot of the overall age of the fleet. Try to stagger replacements so that they don't all come at once, and so that's where we're at right now. We also have two boats that we keep, one's at each station. One at station two is used for primarily the retention ponds, which there are many more on the west side of town than on the east side. The one at station two is used primarily down at the Fox River. And that's it. Any questions?
Look for the brain and start.
Real quick.
Thank you, Chief. Any questions from anyone in the audience? We do have a caller. No, I'm just kidding. Any questions from the council? You know, this is a silly question, but I know that the chief always reminds me that there are no such things as silly questions.
Yeah, I was.
The chief has never reminded me of that. But our fire trucks begin with the number two.
Yes.
Why is that?
When these radio communications came to the Tri-City area, Batavia was the first one to institute the use of radio, so they took 0 to 100. St. Charles was second with 100s. Geneva was third and took the 200s.
I see, okay. And what year was that? That was back in the, oh, my gosh.
Early 60s.
Yeah.
Elburn is 300s. West Chicago was the 400s. They've changed now, but that's pretty much how it is. Just
that's a simple answer to that. Okay, cool. That's pretty neat.
I have a question, Mr. Mayor.
Yes, sir.
When the campaign was on to relocate station number one from current police department building to the east side, I believe, there were concerns about access to the downtown area, and I think that the fire department had proved that it was going to be within, 4 to 5 minutes?
6 minutes.
6 minutes from either location. Are you sustaining that that time?
And for 2009, we were doing 6 minutes or less. I believe it was 91% of the time.
Right.
So we watched that very carefully.
Yes. You kept your word, which is normal for the fire department.
Yeah. So.
Thank you, Mayor.
You're welcome. Anyone else? Anything at all? How's the life of the fire department, Chief?
Excellent.
Oh, you practiced that, didn't you?
I do.
Yes.
Chief, I just wanted to ask you about all your grant writing, because it seems like every time you, a lot of times you get your equipment from a grant.
We just completed a grant from the Department of Homeland Security for $42,000 for replacement of turnout gear. Before that, we had one for $17,000. That went to turnout gear also, the protective clothing that the firefighters wear. An ensemble is about $1,400 each, coat and pants. We've developed much of the GIS work we did was done through grants from the Fabian Foundation 15 years ago. That gave us the leg up on that. And then we've been able to reasonably successful. We've got two grant applications in now, one to replace an engine, another to start work on replacing breathing apparatus. We'll see where that goes.
How much you get.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
This is a silly question. It'll be the last one, I promise. But the menu of opportunities you showed on the screen, that when you respond to an emergency, mm-hmm. and you can cull through that information in the cab, Do the other departments responding have that same information?
Not completely, because they're not always all using the same software that we are.
So therefore, obviously, you're in charge of the scene. Hence, yeah. You have, okay.
So it. We use that to direct them. And
got it. Okay. Thank you. Thank you, Chief. Item number four, ladies and gentlemen, amendments to the agenda. Are there any amendments tonight from any member of the council? Item five is the omnibus agenda. All items marked with an asterisk are considered to be routine and can be enacted by one motion.
So moved.
Second.
Motion by Hill, seconded by Marks to approve the omnibus agenda as presented. Mr. Clerk, please take the roll.
Robert Piper?
Aye.
Ron Singer?
Aye.
Don Vogelsberg?
Aye.
Chuck Brown?
Aye.
Dorothy Flanagan?
Aye.
Sam Hill?
Aye.
Greg Maladra?
Aye.
Richard Marks?
Aye.
We skip down to item 10, municipal bills for payment. Mr. Clerk, please read the bills to be paid.
Bills for payment total $1,808,184.59.
Mr. Mayor, I move that we approve and pay the bills as read and as displayed on the city's website.
Second.
Alderman Brown motions to pay the bills as read and displayed on the city's website. That motion is seconded by Alderman Flanagan. Any questions or comments? Mr. Clerk, please take the roll.
Robert Piper?
Aye.
Ron Singer?
Aye.
Don Vogelsberg?
Aye.
Chuck Brown?
Aye.
Dorothy Flanagan?
Aye.
Sam Hill?
Aye.
Greg Maladra?
Aye.
Richard Marks?
Aye.
We jump down to Committee of the Whole, Items of Business. Item 11A through Item 11E, just so you know, were considered earlier this evening. Item 11A, consider resolution number 2010-61, authorizing signers for legacy Treasury direct U.S. Treasury investment accounts for City of Geneva Cemetery's endowed care account. This includes the recommendation offered by Alderman Marks that the language be adjusted to reflect two signatures.
Moved.
Second.
Motion by Dr. Brown, seconded by Alderman Marks.
Just a point of order, Mr. Mayor.
Yes, sir.
Seeing as A through E were unanimous, do we still have to vote individually? Or?
We do.
We do.
Okay. Unfortunately, yeah. In fact, the city attorney anticipated your silly question. Because we didn't have proper notification, we can't put him on the omnibus agenda.
Okay.
So that's the only reason. Otherwise, we'd be sharing a room with Blago. Okay, I apologize.
We don't want that.
Sorry, Don. I know you're a big supporter.
I was just going to make a comment of the year two hairs, but whatever. Dish it out.
What the hell just happened, Mr. Superintendent? We have a motion by Dr. Brown and a second by Alderman Marks. Mr. Clerk, please take the roll.
Robert Piper?
Aye.
Ron Singer?
Aye.
Don Vogelsberg?
Aye.
Chuck Brown?
Aye.
Dorothy Flanagan?
Aye.
Sam Hill?
Aye.
Greg Maladra?
Aye.
Richard Marks?
Aye.
Motion passes unanimously. Or correction, with 8 affirmative votes, 2 absents. Item 11B, consider resolution number 2010-62, authorizing signers for legacy Treasury direct U.S. Treasury investment accounts for City of Geneva Cemetery new development accounts.
So moved.
So moved. Second.
Motion by Alderman Singer, seconded by Alderman Vogelsberg. Questions or comments? Mr. Clerk, please take the roll call.
Robert Piper?
Aye.
Ron Singer?
Aye.
Don Vogelsberg?
Aye.
Chuck Brown?
Aye.
Dorothy Flanagan?
Aye.
Sam Hill?
Aye.
Greg Maladra?
Aye.
Richard Marks?
Aye.
Item 11B passes with 8 affirmative votes, 2 absents. Item 11C, consider 2009-10 carryover budget amendments to 2010-11.
Move approval.
Second.
Alderman Hill makes the motion. A close second, but we give that to Alderman Marks.
Tough room.
Questions or comments? Mr. Clerk, please take the roll.
Robert Piper?
Aye.
Ron Singer?
Aye.
Don Vogelsberg?
Aye.
Chuck Brown?
Aye.
Dorothy Flanagan?
Aye.
Sam Hill?
Aye.
Greg Maladra?
Aye.
Richard Marks?
Aye.
Motion passes with 8 affirmative votes, 2 absent. Item 11D, consider resolution number 2010-63, authorizing execution of sealing and abandonment of well number 3 at 620 Logan Avenue.
So moved.
Second.
Motion by Alderman Flanagan, seconded by Alderman Piper. Any questions or comments? Mr. Clerk, please take the roll.
Robert Piper?
Aye.
Ron Singer?
Aye.
Don Vogelsberg?
Aye.
Chuck Brown?
Aye.
Dorothy Flanagan?
Aye.
Sam Hill?
Aye.
Greg Maladra?
Aye.
Richard Marks?
Aye.
Motion passes with 8 affirmative votes, 2 absent. Item 11E, consider resolution number 2010-64, rejecting the 2010 tree trimming project bids and authorizing for rebid of these processes.
So move.
Alderman Singer makes the motion. Alderman Piper makes the second. Any questions or comments? Mr. Clerk, please take the roll.
Robert Piper?
Aye.
Ron Singer?
Aye.
Don Vogelsberg?
Aye.
Chuck Brown?
Aye.
Dorothy Flanagan?
Aye.
Sam Hill?
Aye.
Greg Maladra?
Aye.
Richard Marks?
Aye.
Motion passes with 8 affirmative votes and 2 absent. We're on to item 11F, ladies and gentlemen. Consider a request by Milray Cyclery and the International Cycling Classic for use of city right-of-way and police services for the Milray Cyclery Classic, July 10, 2010, from 9 a.m. to 9 p.m. A motion and a second is in order to put this matter on the floor for discussion.
So moved.
Second.
Piper makes the motion. Hill makes the second. We'd like to begin tonight with some information presented by our very own Paul Evans, who is here. There he is. And just a reminder that when Paul has completed his comments, if there's anyone who wishes to make any comments, ask any questions, we certainly invite you to do so, but we ask that you come to the podium and that you please share with us your name, spell your last name. If it's a business address you want to share, that's fine. If it's a home address, that's fine as well. Speak directly into the microphone, and we'll move forward in that process. So,
a point of order, Mr. Mayor.
Yes.
Do you wish that members of the audience come forth before members of the council?
I usually defer to the council on that.
Okay.
It depends. I mean,
I don't care. Just
is there anybody you don't want to hear from? Or
no, not really. They didn't show up.
Yeah, they're all in this horseshoe.
Mr. Evans, welcome.
Thank you, Mayor and City Council. I wanted to update a little bit of some of the things that we've been doing since last Monday as far as trying to get more information and clarify some of the issues for the council tonight. First of all, one of the things we asked, Bruce Heidloff is with us tonight, is is the sponsor for the Milray Cycler Classic, is to go door-to-door to get some talk to the businesses about the race itself and see what support is out there for this race. In doing so, he also had the assistance of Dr. Pat Zanelli, who also went out door-to-door to receive some petitions and talk about the race. And then in addition to that, we also had a number of emails in response to the city sending an e-blast out to all the businesses about the race, asking their opinion and to log that with us. We also used the downtown merchant meeting on June 16th to discuss this topic and to go over it again with the merchants. The results of the petitions that I've compiled, I'll go through the businesses that have listed their support, and then I have also the ones that have listed their that are against the bike race. I'll start. State Street Jewelers, Lieben Financial Services. These are ones that are in favor of us. Yeah, State Street Jewelers, Lieben Financial Services, Macella, Harrington Inn, Graham's Chocolate, Hans Bakery, Grotto Italian Tapas, Chianti's, Pass Basket, RJ Design, Peaceful Parlor, Michelangelo's Deli, The Latest Crave, Geneva Wine Cellar, Country Naturals, Fiora's, Front Street Cantina, Preservation Bread and Wine, Egg Harbor, Geneva Jake's, Bears Gone Wild on Third, Needles Things, Inglenook Pantry, Cocoa Bean, Kiss the Sky, Fox River Pilates, Blue Haven Capital, Stockholm's, Foxfire, Urban Grill, Bicycle Heaven, Genoa Pizza, Joseph's Meats, Fagan's, Chic Resale, Le Tissu Colbert, Great Harvest Bread Company, Geneva Ale House, Galena Garlic Company, Profusion, Core Wellness Centers, Starbucks, Image Awards, Designer's Desk, Town and Country Gardens. Those are the communities. There's 46 of these businesses that have indicated support in the form of a petition or at the merchant meeting, or they have sent an email in support of this. And then the businesses, we have six businesses that have indicated they are against it, would be the Paper Merchant, La Toccata d'Italia, Geneva Antique Market, The Little Traveler, Persimmon Tree, and Wildwood Restaurant. So there's 46 that are for and 6 against. Obviously, a number of the businesses that we were concentrating on are in the actual 3rd Street corridor area. In addition to that, we also had Bruce Heidloff also will be meeting with the Bike Ped Committee Chairman to go over that with that volunteers. We have taken the information that Chief Mexen had provided as far as what safety procedures and things that he would like to see, and we have put that by the race organizers, and they're comfortable with that format and think it's very doable as far as what they've asked to do. You know, so they're in agreement with that. Again, we've sent out several emails, and in addition to that, I believe the mayor and the Economic Development Director, Ellen DeVita, attended the Chamber of Commerce meeting last week, and a majority of support was indicated by the chamber with a lot of positive comments. There were some, about three big concerns, such as liability insurance and parking, but for the most part, the chamber was in support of the bike race. Another thing that we did is we looked at, we asked, I think there was some talk about reviewing the route, and so we asked the police and fire to review the route, what would happen if we moved this around, primarily if we moved it one block west to 7th Street. And as part of that, Erica Passarelli had looked at that, and he said it would be problematic for the police department. It would add significant intersections and detours to the planning. We would require, we would be required to close South Street at Western and direct traffic west to Burgess, which would then put in them onto the roadway that is already under construction. Some motorists may choose to turn to Cheever, and that road is also being worked on. We also be required to close 7th at James, and this would necessitate the addition of at least two officers to cover both of these intersections, bringing the total to number to 5. In addition to this, some of the comments we have is that it would turn the back of the back of the race to the downtown and could result in spectators parking their cars in the downtown but then going into the residential neighborhoods to watch the race, so it wouldn't have the desired impact of trying to have some of the businesses, the patrons of the race interact with the businesses. Also, as far as parking is concerned, we also did a parking survey, and we have a number of different results to share with you. There's a map that was circulated, or that this map that we have here, in the indication here is these parking spaces that we have, that we've indicated in this general area. This is area that we're indicating, or would indicate to people attending the race, this is where you can park at. You know, and I hope that was, tried to make that clear at the last meeting. Whereas, you know, we know that the local residents and people that have shopped in Geneva regularly know there's other places they can park on second, and also the regular parking lots on street in these areas of Franklin and Fulton and Campbell and around the different areas. Primarily, also it was talked about, what about using the parking deck? And so we had a count done. And on top of the top level of the parking deck is 100 spaces, parking spaces, and we would then reserve those for employees to be able to park on the top level of the parking deck. And overall, there's 331 spaces at the parking deck. Overall, the whole metro parking area down there that we have, this whole area is 1,059 parking spaces that we'd have available, and we're expecting a maximum of 2,000 people, and that's over the course of the day. And again, the way that this is, the thought is, the way this will run is it will be soft at first, probably through noon, 1 o'clock, and then it will begin to build for the 6 o'clock professional, their key race for the number one category, which is around a two-hour race. And that's the climax of the particular bike race, this event. And with that, we also wanted to confirm that we have talked to the high school, and the high school is where we would use to stage the bikers coming in for the tournament, the race. And they would park their bikes or unload at that facility, and then they would ride in as they warm up, which is nothing. I don't even know if it's much over a mile from the high school, or a mile or two at the most to ride in. So that is one of the things that we would do in helping with the organizers as far as the registration, and would indicate that's where they would go to bring into stage for the event. Also, as indicated last time, we would be working with the 6th Street School, which is in this area. There's 48 parking spaces, and this would be dedicated to any of the residents that need to get their vehicles off the street. Overall, there are about 91 spaces that would be 91 spaces that would be let me get that. Here it is. 91 on-street parking spaces. This is for the commercial, and then there's another 24 parking spaces in the overrun area between Fulton and Fulton and South Street. As far as the residents, there's 128 total possible parking spaces on street, which would be considered residential parking. And then, what else? And let's see. And then 45 is the number of parking spaces for the St. Mark's, which we reserve for the mass for them, the service for them. And then lastly is also the Siegel's lot, which is proximity here, is of 145 spaces. The other thing that we did is I did call a number of communities to try to go over some of their comparisons with that. One of the communities I talked to was Kenosha, Wisconsin, and this is their 20th year. They call it Food Folks and Spokes, and theirs is a criterion, but it's in a city park area, so it's not quite like ours, but they get about 15,000 people, and they are the it's actually run by the YMCA in that town as the sole sponsor. The closest one that runs a criterion in the downtown probably would be Evanston, and this is the one event that they close their downtown is for this bike race, which they call the Grand Prix. And this year, actually at the date of our last meeting on the 14th, the city of Evanston awarded $10,000 to help support the race because they didn't raise as much in sponsorship as they usually would, or because it's a down year. And they wanted to see the race go forward, so they voted an additional $10,000 to do that. And with that, they get about 15,000 to 20,000 people. And the city has, they said, 16 officers for 12 hours and two firemen that help them do their race in the downtown. Also talked to Beverly, Illinois, but Beverly, as we saw in the film from last time, they are a residential area, so it isn't as good a comparison for us. And it's also run in an area near a school and a residence area. So it, I don't know if it's as good a comparison. But there are a number of first-year, on the schedule this year, a number of first-year communities such as Homewood and Brookfield. And I've made contact with both of them. And we both will, you know, after the race, compare our notes and how things went, you know, in the community it would be, if it would be going forward. And the same thing, I've also looked at Downers Grove, which is not necessarily on this circuit, but it is. It was home to a national championship for a figure eight course, I guess, they had since 1991. But last year, and I think mostly due to economics, they pulled their $37,000 funding, and they lost that race, and that race was immediately grabbed by Glencoe. And Glencoe now is taking that race. So those are some of the talks that I've had with other communities, and I think with that, let me see if what else I wanted to update you on. I think that's pretty good as far as a lot of the research I had. If there's any questions or areas that you think I need to highlight, let me know.
Questions for Mr. Evans, and I will defer to the council's wishes if you'd prefer to hear from those who are with us tonight. First, that's strictly up to you. Does it matter? Council, Mr. Piper.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Paul, I was talking to one of the brothers earlier.
Michael.
Evanston has done this now, what, 3 years, correct? 3 years, and they just signed up for another three-year contract.
Michael, up to the podium, Hanson.
Is that correct?
And if you could, for those watching at home and around the world, just reintroduce yourself.
Michael Garrison. Do you have my address again, too? Or?
Just you represent...
Breakaway Event Productions.
Fantastic.
Yeah, Michael, I'm just asking the question because when he mentions Evanston, and that's the closest thing to what we do here in Geneva, you and I had talked earlier, and I think we had talked, and you said that Evanston's done this for 3 years, and they just signed up for another three-year contract. Is that correct?
Yeah, they concluded the three, and then they just engaged in a renewal, which is another 3 years.
Another three. Okay. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Dr. Brown?
Thank you. Could I ask you to add a little more to your statement that the Bike Ped Committee was contacted?
Yeah. I don't know if Bruce, you want to talk at all? We got the name from Dick of the Bike Ped guy, and they're going to be speaking. I don't know if Bruce, go ahead. Come on, come up and say. This is Bruce Heidloff, the sponsor, and I don't know.
Yeah. I haven't.
Bruce is also the owner of the Millray Cycle Race, yeah. So we should all recognize Bruce's face. And
I have not contacted them yet, but I have talked with them before on other projects, so I don't see it to be a problem.
Well, I was just hoping through them to get more volunteers and more interest because certainly they represent people who are very interested in biking.
Yeah, I would imagine we'd get quite a few volunteers from them and also all the different organizations.
Will you be actively trying to get some Geneva volunteers to help the
Almost definitely, because I'll be needing probably 40 volunteers.
Some of them I presume that will come with the race and will be people who've done it before. We're not talking about all amateur volunteers, are we?
No, they have. You have about 40 staff, I believe, right?
Yeah, but I can answer your question pretty directly. I've spoken with ABD, which is the Verizon Cycling Team. And part of our talks just last week was the team's going to help out. And I believe the team stopped in and talked to you or Kevin at your shop. Mm-hmm. So they're on board. So those are seasoned riders. They know how bike race runs. They'll be able to handle the corners as well as traffic and issues that come up. So that's something that I was engaging with. Due to the fact that they're very close by, I mean, they're within 10 or 15 minutes of the location here. So.
Well, I was just assuming there'd be some people who would be willing to volunteer but would have the impression that they really had never done this and they'd want somebody else to be there who was a little more expert in what they should do. And the people from Geneva are enthusiastic. They know about the town, but they may not know exactly what they're supposed to do in terms of handling how the peloton comes by and what the differences, you know, what the distances are between racers, how many seconds gap you get, that sort of thing may not be familiar to most volunteers.
Right, and that's what I'm saying is that we are going to have some quality seasoned veterans that have handled bike racing many, many times. And in conjunction to have a meeting with some locals that are interested in helping out, they'll be told exactly what to do, and they'll understand. Again, safety is our number one concern, and we take pride with that.
Thank you. Thank you.
Anyone else from the council? Alderman Marks, then Alderman Hill.
Just a couple of questions. I'm not sure who to direct this to. The sponsors are bringing in volunteers to help run the event, correct? And then who's providing the barricade for people on? I mean, there's 12 or 13 places that are being blocked off.
Well, We talked about that a little bit already in some of the first of preliminary discussions on that, and they'll bring, it's like 35 or so that we have from them, and then we have I've talked with Steve Lemaire and said between the 35 that they have and what we have, that we have enough to cover those intersections.
Okay, so the volunteers that they're bringing in don't really help, those 35 aren't going to run the event. They're going to be also at the barricades, correct?
They'll be say
at
that.
The barricades on all those intersections.
Some of them, you know, I mean, some of them run the course. Some of them are registration people
too.
That's
what
you know,
I figured,
they
that's
run
why
it.
I didn't
so
know.
It's not all. They have. I don't know how many. If it's 12 or so, that are actually like corner. They make sure that their people with radios are all the corner marshals, and then we deal with all the intersections too.
And so, are these people at the intersections trained somehow by the police department, or how is that handled?
I need to clarify a couple things. Andy Garrison. With breakaway events. I was going to say all the corner marshals are volunteers. Mm-hmm. They're administered by our safety director, Jeff Mashevsky, who is a full-time fireman in Milwaukee. and he works for the North Shore Fire Department. He's also a paramedic. And he gives everybody a brief training. It's pretty simple. Basically, it's a six-turn course, so you know someone will be on all the turns plus all the intersections. The radios will be on all the turns or key locations. We bring 32 radios with us. He basically says, you know, push and talk. If you see if somebody goes down, you describe where it happened, let go of the mic. But he'll be on site also with a safety vehicle. And basically, it's run really safe. And I explained last time the pace car and all that kind of stuff. And then we'll have 8 United States Cycling Federation officials on site. They'll be at the finish line and around the course. And, you know, obviously we'll have the police officers on staff and then the race management. And we also have incredible communication. So any issue happens whatsoever, it's taken care of immediately. And if the race needs to be neutralized or shut down, that happens immediately.
So there is someone at every barricade then?
Not at every barricade, but every intersection around the course.
Okay, so
there'll be somebody on one side or the other, and it's obviously easy. If they see a car coming, they just go across the street or whatever. If it's a major intersection, which we really don't have.
You don't have that many here.
Any here, then we'd have 2. But every single corner will have, at a minimum, we'll have a course marshal with a radio, and the pace car's got a radio. If we do have a follow motorcycle, I don't know if USA Cycling wants it here. We're still waiting for their report. They'll have a radio in their helmet, and the officials in race management will all have radios. So there'll be a lot of people around this course.
Okay.
If you have any other.
Other questions about the...
anything else, Alderman Marks? Alderman Hill.
Yes, I have the same question, Mr. Garrison, or similar question. And I believe all of the events that we have in downtown Geneva where 3rd Street is affected, there are folks around either from the chamber, from the city, available to give directions to people from out of town as to where various places are that the out-of-towners want to visit. Bathrooms, for example.
Sure.
Maybe restaurants that they've heard about and want to find. I'm sure your folks are not going to have all that knowledge in their heads. Has anything been set up, Paul, to provide these officials at the intersections with information as to where the bathrooms are located, a place like the Millrace Inn is located, or the high school is located?
Not yet. I mean, we're trying to do one step at a time, but that's on our list. Should this race be approved, we're making an ongoing list of, you know, restrooms, signage, you know, traffic, barricades, training. There's a whole list of stuff that we're compiling, but until we get a go-ahead from the city council, you know, we're not moving forward with that.
I understand. I'm
sorry. Go ahead. I can add to that, too. After the last meeting, something like this was sort of discussed in the meeting last time.
So as a matter of fact, Mr. Garrison, just for everyone's benefit, yeah. Dr. Brown suggested that if there's 40 volunteers from ICC, they should at very least be paired with a volunteer who's familiar with the local haunts, whether they be restaurants, or God knows what, so that officially we know what to do, but casually and hospitably we also know where to tell our folks who are coming to town, 2 blocks to your left, here's a nice place to park, beautiful place, what have you. So
we also had an idea. We were just sort of brainstorming outside after the meeting, and I think it may have come from the doctor also, about each person would have a map with a listing of all the locations and the locations on the map, and I thought that was a really good idea too.
Okay, good. I am a little disappointed that the bike ped committee has not been contacted, though. They could be of great assistance, and I'm disappointed that you haven't had a chance to do that, Bruce. Troubles me. That's all I have, Mr. Mayor.
Mayor, can I add one more statement about an idea that we came up with, too, that's going to be real helpful?
Sure.
And it really is something that is right in front of us, is that we have announcers that make announcements throughout the day. So we thought it'd be great to have cards up on stage and announce from time to time where the restaurants are, where the bathrooms are, where, you know, whatever we all decide together, the most important ingredients are to, you know, have that warm, fuzzy feeling for the folks that come into the city.
So frequent public service announcements would be part of the script.
That would be great. Yes.
Maybe like, you know, maps to the stars, homes, that kind of thing.
Yeah. Hey, Sam, I have worked with this committee before, you know, volunteered and mm-hmm. things like that. I've been focusing more on, you know, this week of contacting, you know, the businesses and things like that. I just didn't have time to work on the volunteer efforts yet. But I definitely will be talking to those guys.
Okay, great. I thought that was one of the suggestions by staff members and that you had a week to at least make a quick phone call.
Well, I was really focusing on talking to the businesses this week.
Fine. Thank you for your explanation. I do have another question, Mayor.
Alderman Hill, floor is yours still.
Yes. Paul, the list of businesses that were in favor and I don't think maybe some opposed to the event, mostly all on 3rd Street. I don't recall hearing any of the names. I didn't recognize any of the names of your friends and mine at the Berry House.
There was. Latest Crave. Latest Crave was there. The Wine Cellar are both from the Berry House.
Good. I guess my ears were closed.
Well, there were two. I guess I went fast, and if you didn't know exactly all their addresses, I can think of at least two there is all.
All right. Thank you.
Anyone else from the dais? Dr. Brown?
Thank you. A follow-up question to Paul. Well, maybe this is also Mr. Garrison. Give us an idea. Does the group of riders that we call a peloton, does that come by about once every 4 minutes or every 3 minutes? How does that work?
Well, go ahead. The course is a 0.8.
0.8.
So and they ride about 30, you know, being the doctor and all that, they ride about, 30 miles
an
hour?
What is it? They should know.
Well, the lower categories will go about 15 to 20 miles an hour, so, you know,
3 minutes, yeah.
Okay, thank you. And I'm a little slow tonight, so. And then the pro.
That's how it basically works is typically there's a 2 minute break between the bunch of riders coming by.
Yeah, they pretty much stick together, and then if riders fall off in the back of the pack, if they don't catch up, then the officials will drop them from the race. And then the pro riders go about 30 miles an hour, but they're unbelievable. I mean, bikes flying around. Right on each other's wheel, and they all stay together.
I guess my second question is ESDA going to be involved? Could they be involved? Are they interested in being involved? Have they been contacted?
Okay.
That's four.
I'm not sure if I know what ESDA.
The Emergency Services Disaster Agency, which is coordinated by Mr. Bob Hudon, has a group of volunteers who provide, well, traffic management, if you will, crowd control, what have you, and general services.
You will
services.
See them this week out every day.
Right. Oh, okay.
Full force.
They're certainly aware of it, Dr. Brown, because I know the issue was discussed at their meeting last week.
They're wonderful people. They do a great job. So
I don't know if they've been formally requested. My suspicion is that until there's a yay or nay on the matter, then Steve Mexum and the others will be coordinating with them, which is the usual chain of command.
I believe that at least some of them would be quite interested in
I'm sure they would be.
A group of people who like to give their services, donate their services to the city, and they do a wonderful job.
Alderman Vogelsberg.
Thank you, Mayor. Paul, that's what I wanted to ask since we're talking about timing. So between, you know, groups of cyclists, people be able to cross the street, shop, do. So it's not like the whole town, this 3rd Street will not be close to pedestrians, right? People be able to cross the street and go shopping.
I think that all of us that haven't been to a professional bike race or a bike race of this criteria, of this type, it will be a new experience, but exactly. You're going to see a bunch of bikes whiz by, and then you'll be either reading your newspaper on your phone, going to the shops, whatever it is, because it'll be another 2 minutes before you see them again, you know, or whatever, 3 minutes, whatever. So that really does, after a while of watching them go around, okay, I want to go over and get a pop. You know, I want to go and let's go get a cupcake over here, or let's go into the shop. You know, I saw something I wanted to see. You know, or they have the little brochure probably from the chamber of all the ones. Oh, it's just located behind us. Let's take a look at that. So, I mean, it does afford a lot of the opportunity, and I think until they really get into the final laps, then I think, you know, then more people are going to try to see who's leading and what, especially in the final lap. But prior to that, there's a lot of time for that type of thing, strolling and seeing
okay.
what's going.
Thank you.
Alderman Flanagan.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. But between, if I remember or refresh my recollection about before the main race at 6 o'clock, there is a pretty large gap between like 4-something or yeah. other and to 6 o'clock, like an hour to
depending
an hour
on how the races go, you know, if something slows it down. But it's about 40 to 45-minute break, I think, before the main race, which is scheduled around 6 o'clock, I believe.
I thought it was longer than that.
It's 45 minutes.
Mr. Garrison, you have to speak to the mic because we know there are lots of folks interested in what you have to say.
There's a 45-minute break completely. If any of the races are running a little longer, it may eat up 5 or 10 minutes of that. However, there's 15 minutes of announcements where they're not racing added to that. Okay. So that's where you got your hour.
Where your hour.
Yeah. So and the announcements, basically, we have two professional announcers, and they'll say, like, so-and-so's here from Hamburg, Germany. So-and-so's here from, you know, Southern California. You know, they'll explain who some of the riders are and tell the audience about, you know, answer some questions about that they may have about racing and, you know, things like that. And that takes about 15 minutes, and then they start the race.
What I wanted to say is that period of time between, like, 5:10 to 6 o'clock, somewhere in that range. That gives a chance for the employees that are working in the district, if they're closing at 5:30. Now, we hope actually
that
a lot of them will stay open. But a lot of this,
I wanted to kind of
exactly. It gives us that out. It also gives us an out for St. Mark's. During that period of time, we would do some coordination with that. So there's a number of things that really, that strategic hour between 5 and 6.
Thank you.
From the dais.
Paul, I just have one other question. Are we only looking at this year, or are we also looking at 3 years? I mean, is this... saying Evanston... it's just a wonder
yeah.
that it was. I mean,
it's just... The proposal is for this year.
Yeah.
Obviously, if it goes well, if it's approved and it goes well, that would bode well. If it's approved and it doesn't go very well, it's going to bode badly. You know, but the race organizers have indicated an interest in obviously trying to make this something that would be more than that. And it's dependent on a lot of factors. But the only thing is just 1 year and see how it goes.
Okay.
From the audience, anyone with any questions or comments for anyone who's made presentations? I have a note that you were interested in speaking, so welcome.
Yes, yes.
I didn't want to forget about you. So.
Mayor and Alderman, my name is Carol Vandenbroek. I'm the financial manager of the Geneva Antique Market, which is in the Berry House, which Paul neglected to mention because we are opposed to the race. We are not opposed to the race in general. We wish them well. We just are opposed to the fact that they're closing down 3rd Street. We have been in the Berry House for 18 years. We've been a long-term supporter of the city. We're hoping to make it to our 20th year. However, every time the city has a function that closes down 3rd Street, our sales plummet. As the current way things go, about 50% of our sales are on weekends. And when we have a closure of 3rd Street, about 50% of those sales go away. And we're coming off of a year of probably the worst economic circumstances that we've had in 50, 60 years. And we're all in the town, I'm sure, just kind of clinging to the fact that it's starting to turn around. And we would like to see it increase. I just don't feel that you are taking into consideration the small retail businesses in the city, particularly on 3rd Street, who depend on people being able to get to their businesses. This will be the 3rd closure of 3rd Street this summer. And with the art show and the car show and now the bicycle race, that closes the street. It closes the ability of our customers to get to us. And we have customers coming from all over the country who come back to Geneva because we have a unique market, a unique merchandise to sell to them. And if they can't get to us, they don't buy from us, and then they don't come the next year. So I just strongly urge you to think about routing this race somewhere other than 3rd Street. And if not, if that's not available to do now, as far as advanced as the planning has become, please take under consideration in the future to stop making 3rd Street the brunt of all the activities in Geneva. Close some other streets. Let some other businesses be affected by your activities. Not always 3rd Street. Thank you.
Thank you. Anyone else from the audience wishing to make a comment, statement, ask a question? Chief Mixon. Everyone shape up. He's carrying.
It's a square gun.
It's a square
gun. We'll see him relax this week.
How you doing, Chief?
Good, thank you.
Welcome.
As you can imagine, safety on the roadways is obviously one of our main concerns. And the key element to really making this a safe event is the volunteers that have been alluded to already. Many of them are going to be untrained volunteers, or at least a portion of them will be. So I think it's key that some of the comments that I'm about to make be mentioned at least and seriously considered and hopefully commented on by the garrisons and possibly by Bruce. Some of them have already been mentioned already, but let me just go through a few of the considerations that I think need to be brought up. First of all of the volunteers have to be reliable and responsible and attentive during this 12-hour period. We can't have people out there on cell phones or just to watch the event. They have to be serious and attentive for the entire 12-hour period. And I'm not implying that they won't be, and I don't mean to insinuate that any of your volunteers are, not for a second. I just want to make sure that that's mentioned, that is an absolute must if we're not going to have police officers there and we're going to have volunteers maintaining control of these intersections. They have to be reliable, each and every one of them. There have to be an adequate number. And I heard, Bruce, you mentioned about 40, and I was glad to hear that. There's like 13 intersections for a 12-hour period. That's a significant amount of time that needs to these intersections to be covered. And the intersections need to be covered throughout that time period. They cannot be left unattended at any time. They can't walk away and attend to something else and leave something unattended. I think in the last meeting it was mentioned that we had a race similar to this back in maybe the early 90s. And a motorist did drive around one of the barricades, did get on the course, and one of the cyclists ran into the motorist. And we need to make sure that does not happen. So, again, the volunteers are a key element in making sure that this is a safe event. Each intersection has to have somebody with radio communications. Again, I heard mentioned that the marshals will have radio communication. I think it's important that each and every intersection have good communication. So, again, if someone gets on the course, it can be people can be notified immediately and without any delay. One thing that has not been mentioned that I think needs to be considered also is are the residents that live within the race course itself. They need to be instructed very clearly on what the procedures are going to be if they need to get a vehicle out of the area. Most particularly the residents that live along the route itself. If someone that lives on the route that is in the middle of the block needs to get out, they need to understand exactly what they need to do and who they need to contact to get out safely. And so it's very important that not only the volunteers have clear instructions and specific instructions, but I think it's equally as important that the residents be considered and be provided with clear instructions as well, so everyone is working on the same page. I believe that is all I had, Mr. Mayor.
Chief, would you mind hanging out? Because I'm certain there are some questions from the council. Alderman Vogelsberg?
Thank you, Mayor. And my apologies for being absent last week. But, Chief, why are the police officers not manning the intersections? It seems like I thought for our special event application, Public Works and the police department, there was a price, and you kind of booked. I mean, it's...
It's strictly a cost issue. I mean, it would
cost... I've been on the other side, I know.
It would cost the organizers a significant amount of money. As it is, they are going to be paying for the services of at least three officers for that 12-hour period of time. They've asked and said that they can provide adequate volunteer coverage. So with our oversight with the three officers and their assurance that these needs can be met, we feel that it can be done adequately and safely with the volunteers to minimize the cost to the organizers and to make it viable. But again, these needs must be met in order for us to not have police officers or ESDA members at these intersections.
Thank you.
Anyone else? Questions or comments for the chief? Thank you, Chief. Good to see you as always. Mr. Evans?
I was just going to mention one comment. That's one of the reasons that sort of the course was picked where it's at, too. All of these roads are like 25-mile-an-hour roads to begin with, and we made sure we're staying off of state routes, signalized intersections, and things like that, ones that would definitely require street, you know, police officers to be at those plus a faster rate of speed and people turning off quicker. And so that's one of the reasons the course was selected, is to being a little bit one off or so from like State Street and 31. So,
anyone else in the audience before I recognize Mr. Garrison again? Yes, sir. Welcome back.
I'm really glad to be back.
Good to see you.
Thank you. Matt Tamillo, stores La Toccata d'Italia on 226 South 3rd Street. Some of what I'm going to say is going to be a replication of what we talked about last week from the standpoint of planning. I still feel, sitting here listening to what's going on, that with, I think there's about 18 or 19 work days left for July 10th. And based on a lot of people here being tied up with Swedish days this week, and the fact that we still haven't been able to talk to everyone that should be discussed with respect to the race, being the rest of the merchants, the residents, that we're in the process of sitting here tonight making a final decision. I don't know who's getting what out of this, other than the fact that I think bicycling is great. I'm not sure if Breakaway Events is a 501c3, but I don't think they are. They don't do this for their health, so... And I think there's money that changes hands, and the bicycle people that ride in the race have to pay something for it, and somebody gets paid. And we are at the point of being concerned about how much it's going to cost them for police, and we're going to keep that to about three fully trained people, and we're going to bring in 40 outside volunteers, and I think that's great. But I didn't hear anything about anybody training these 40 volunteers in the next 18 days, nor do we have 40 volunteers, as the good doctor suggested, that we have experienced people from town be with every one of them. That hasn't been decided yet. Yet, with all those questions, I'm only covering a few of them. Who's paying for the additional porta-johns? Aren't there going to be any? We just going to have people, the extra 2,000 people, randomly walk through our town and walk in any store they can to ask to use a bathroom. We don't have a lot of public facilities, as you all well know, in downtown Geneva. Of the 46 supposed people that voted yes in favor of that, I would like Paul to spend 5 minutes and break out how many of them were on State Street and how many were on 3rd Street, and eliminate all the restaurants. If I still owned a restaurant, I would be the first one to say yes. You're going to bring an extra group of people into town, I'll guarantee I'll do very well. We're not talking about the restaurant business. We're talking about the average merchant on 3rd Street. Somebody else got up earlier and said about what happens on 3rd Street. That goes without saying. Again, we have said this several times, that they are going to bring an additional 2,000 people to this community as a result of the bike race. And that is not a cumulative number. when we look at the people that aren't going to stay here because they can't find parking, it's an offset. They may bring in 2,000, and maybe 1,000 of people that normally shop here on Saturday are not going to be able to shop, and they'll go away. The net might be an increase. But the people that are coming for the bike race are coming for the bike race. They're not coming here to shop like the people who will turn away because they can't park anyplace. We've only said that, I think, last week, some of my constituents, the merchants, that in all fairness, people, you don't need to be making decisions on my best benefit of how I'm going to pay my bills. I know what I have to do to run a business. Deciding to run an event down 3rd Street that's going to affect not only me but other merchants, I really don't feel is your decision whether I make more money or less money. That's my decision. That's why I pay taxes. That's why I have a store on 3rd Street and have had for 6 years. And I expect to be there a little bit longer. But at the way things are going with the economy, which you have no control over, neither do I don't like people making decisions for what they think is better for me. This is not better for me. And I'm being extremely parochial about this. I'm only concerned about one person. I said this last week. I have to make my payroll. I have to pay my bills. That's not a consideration on your part. And maybe it shouldn't be, but at least you take it in advisement that the decisions you make affect our pocketbooks personally, which in turn, if we don't get sales, you don't get the sales tax. It's kind of a vicious circle. I don't know how much money is changing hands with all the bike riders and what they're paying to be in this race and what have you. I think that's great. And I, as I said, past president of Tri-City Soccer for 10 years with 3,000 kids, I think this is the greatest thing in the world for kids. What's it going to do from the standpoint of revenue? And nobody can answer that question. I don't want to hear anybody tell me that I should be more aggressive and give away more of my product that I've given away already in the last year, trying to stay alive with unbelievable discounts. That's not going to bring more business in. That's just a break even. That's just an offer of trying to get people in the door. That's not going to help with the bike race. If the people can't be there, they're not going to come shopping. And again, I didn't hear how many of those 46 people. A couple of them that I know were over on 7th Street. Few of them are on State Street, none of which are going to be affected by the closing of 3rd Street. And, you know, if you ask somebody's opinion, if you ask the gentleman in charge of Milray Cyclery, if I had my store there and I sold bicycles, what do you think my answer would be with respect to this? I think it's a great idea. May increase my sales. I'm not going to get my shop closed, the street in front of me. I'm going to get additional business in Geneva. Okay. The reality is the section of 3rd Street you're closing. And, you know, my suggestion is start the race at 4 o'clock on Saturday. Run it till 9 o'clock at night and start again at 1 o'clock after church on Sunday. Run it to 5 o'clock. Everybody gets the best of both worlds. They still get their race. We still get our store open. The planning portion of this, and the gentleman who just left from, I think it's EEC, the water.
Mr. Wallers.
Mr. Wallers?
EEI.
Correct. EEI, excuse me. On one slide alone, he mentioned the word, he had the word planning stated in a slide. He only mentioned it five more times. We still seem to be lacking that to a certain extent. And tonight, if we make a decision, and the decision is yes, in the next 18 to 19 working days, whatever it might be, plus or minus, we're going to do everything we just talked about, and it's all going to be done right. It's a question mark that I have, and I'm sure some of you people have. Thank you for your time.
Thank you, sir. Anyone else in the audience? Mr. Simon?
I'm Mike Simon, 404 South 3rd Street, Geneva. There are two points, and Mr. Tumilla just brought up one of them. In the 30 years I've been here, and I've been proud to be a businessman here for the majority of my life, every event that's gone on has had two things in common. First, it's been well planned. I remember when the first Christmas walk was staged. It took months to put it together. The first Festival of the Vine took years to put together. The auto race, whose name is the auto exhibit.
Concourse,
yes. That took at least a year to put together. And all the details were hammered out, and there are a lot of people who made sure that there wasn't anything left to chance at the last minute. The hallmark of all of our festivals has been they've been well thought out, well planned, and when the customers come, they have a good time and they leave saying, this is nice. This is Geneva. I want to come back. The Garrisons obviously have done their homework, and I'm pleased they like Geneva, and I think this event could make a lot of sense and help us all, but not this year. We're rushing this through based on the fact they need a town at the last minute. If we're going to do this right, we need to plan this, and if they like Geneva as much as they say they do, and I'm sure they do because Geneva's a really likable place, then let's sit down and plan this strategically for next year. Because I haven't heard anybody in all the planning tell me what's going to make my customers, and as I've told you in the past, I have between 700 and 1,000 people who come through the Traveler on a Saturday. I haven't heard anybody who's told me how those people are going to be told by somebody local where to park, where my store is, how they're going to get there, how to get rerouted. And those are people who are not going to leave Geneva with a good taste in their mouth. If we can't make our existing customers feel comfortable, then let's slow down and let's do this right so that everybody can be happy in the long run. I want this to be a win-win. I think the bike race is going to make a lot of sense, but we have to do it right because we don't want to misstep, because if we misstep, then we're not going to have another chance. We don't want to create bad will because in this economy, we can't afford that. I can't afford to lose customers on a Saturday and have them call and say, I wanted to come to your store, but nobody could tell me how to get there. Nobody could tell me where to park. And the fact that nobody local has been contacted to help, the fact that the police chief is nervous about whether the right volunteers are going to have the right kind of training, the fact that Paul doesn't know who ESDA is and they haven't been contacted 2 weeks before the event makes me really nervous. The other thing that makes me nervous is I have a number of friends who live in the historic district, and I've called a number of them and said, are you familiar with this event? And the majority of them say, yeah. And I said, now, what are your plans for Saturday? Well, no big deal. And I said, okay, your kids have soccer? Yeah. How are you going to get out? We're just going to drive out. Nobody knows what the implications of this are going to be. Nobody sat down and said to anybody, you know what? The window is going to be between 9:45 and 10 o'clock. If you have a 9:30 appointment, you better make sure you've made plans. There are way too many ifs in this year. In the long run, there won't be, but right now they're if. So let's do what we've always done. Let's plan, let's do things right, and let's do things we can be proud of in the long term.
Anyone else in the audience? Yes, Miss or Doctor, forgive me. Welcome back, Doctor.
Hi, Dr. Patricia Zanelli, 21 North 2nd Street, Geneva, Illinois. Everybody that's spoken tonight, with the exception of the Garrisons, really don't know what I've been up to for the last week. So I'm just going to kind of recap. Since the very first moment I heard about this event, all I could see is a win for the Geneva shops and a win for the restaurants and a win for the town, because this is an opportunity for us to have a pre-planned event and try it out. Now, granted, it's a little tight, but even if we had tons more time, it's not going to ensure that the event is going to go any better or worse than trying it out in this way. The Garrisons did not just have Geneva, Illinois to choose from. I would imagine that there are several towns that would jump at the opportunity to have something like this given to them. Now, they seem to like Geneva, and I'm really glad about that because that gives us an opportunity to maybe make some headway. Now, not every festival is great for every business, and that's true. So from the minute I heard about this, I'm like, okay, how can we make this a win for the shops? At first, we were looking at buses to bring in people and drop them off at certain intersections so the people who do shop here could get to their stores. However, after really considering it and talking to a lot of business owners, they're like, you know what? That bus is going to be trouble because we can't guarantee that it'll be quick enough and fast enough that people will utilize it. And there's no real advertising for the bus this close to the event. Okay, so then where do you put your energies? All right, well, let's take the money that we're going to funnel into the buses and instead make a map with all of the businesses that are affected in that area, on that map with a little plug about their business, all the restaurants, all the shops, and give those maps not only out to the people, but also to the volunteers. When I spoke with the garrisons, they seemed very pro that, in addition to getting the signage up, because we really want people to come to this event. And if we don't get some kind of, like, yes or no, it's going to come and go, and we're going to have nothing. So I think our main goal is getting it passed, then advertising it so that we can get people to come. And the third thing is ensuring that, you know, both Mike Simon and, I'm sorry, Matt, I don't know your last name, go, wow, that was a heck of a Saturday. Am I so glad that this happened? And, yes, there may be some people that shy away because the town is being shut down, but if we have some people in parking at the or direction at the beginning of the event who can direct people and say, hey, don't not shop here. This is going to be a great shopping day or whatever, and reassure them, I think we can turn that people kind of wanting to leave into, no, maybe I'll just spend the day and go shopping even longer or something like that and make it a real win for the shops. It is tight. That's why, you know, the quicker we move, the quicker we can get going. But I really feel with all the people that I've spoken with, we have a lot of support behind it. I know at least 10 people who are willing to give time to help and hope to enlist more so that we can make this a win. And that's really all.
Thank you, Doctor. Alderman Piper, do you want to chime in before I recognize the Garrison boys again? Or do you want Mr. Garrison? Do you want to wait for additional comments, or do you want to add or respond to some of the comments?
A couple of the concerns.
Anyone else wishing to ask any questions or make any comments? Mr. Garrison.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I just wanted to first off say that I wanted to respond to the police chief. The police, I did receive an email from Paul last week stating some concerns from the police chief and asking if we thought that it was doable. It's very doable. We carry a staff of 45 people with us. We will have 3,400 linear feet of fencing and barricades with us. Normally we carry 2,000 feet, but we will have an extra 1,400 linear feet with us. Any contingency that comes up as far as the logistics, safety, we are prepared to take care of any contingency. If someone, and I'll give you an example, the police chief mentioned reliable and attentive volunteers. You know, that is very important, and we have had races where someone was shooting the breeze instead of taking care of what their responsibility was, and it's a huge responsibility. We initially talked to them, race management did. They did not, they kept doing it, and we relieved them of their responsibilities with one of our staff. And that's how that worked. We take safety very seriously. If we plan on having an alternate for bathroom breaks, if anyone has to take a bathroom break, they need to call it in on the radio and let us know, and they can't leave till they're relieved. No intersection will be left unattended at any time. If by chance somebody did leave the intersection, the pace car or any of the race management or officials around the course would notice that immediately, and we'd get someone there immediately. Each intersection will have radio communication. We have 32 radios plus 15 Verizon two-ways that we'll have, so that's a total of 47 communication devices. Each residents on the race course will not have to wait till a prescribed time. As Mr. Simon had indicated, I think there's some confusion there. If a resident wants to get out of their house or get back into their house, they may have to wait 15 to 20 seconds before they can cross the intersection once they arrive at the intersection. And that's just if the riders are coming, we wait for them to go past, and we allow them to cross. In addition to that, people can get in and out at any time, like I just said. We are very organized. We can bring this event to the town. Everything as far as planning, this is a really simple grid. It's in mostly a residential area, and I think we can handle it very easily with all the staff we have and all the equipment we have. So the riders are not kids, as someone had indicated. They are adults, and they have money. And the 750 plus minus riders will spend their money here. The spectators that come here, they have money. As Paul indicated, they aren't the beer drinking party crowd that's not going to go in the stores. They're going to come with their spouses, their kids, and they're going to go into the stores and they're going to see what people have to offer. And I have 20 years of experience seeing this. And they will go into Little Traveler, and they will spend their money, and they will go into Match Store, and they will spend their money if they're open, if they see something they like. Because, as Paul indicated, this is not constant action. They go past, a couple, 3 minutes later, they go past again, and people like to mill around until the end of the race when the finish happens. And they like to go spend their money. And that's typically what I've seen for the last 20 years. I just wanted to address some of those concerns, and I wanted to let you know, and I think people would be surprised, retailers, the few retailers that are against the race because they think it'll hurt their business, I think they'll be surprised if they that they may actually get some additional business. Does anyone have any questions?
Any specific questions from Mr. Garrison? Anyone else in the audience wishing to make a comment, ask a question of anybody who's made comments already? This gentleman here, sir? Not familiar with your shirt. Could you please explain that?
Hi, my name is Tim Kressler. I live at 340 West Haven Circle in Geneva, Illinois.
Nice to see you, Tim.
Nice to see you. My comments will be brief. What I love about living in Geneva is the frequent festivals, the frequent activities that get me and my family to come to the downtown area. It's one of the only times I do take the opportunity to come into town and shop, and I think we would be wasting an opportunity to get residents like myself and residents of the Tri-Cities area down into our downtown area to experience what Geneva has to offer. So I'm strongly in favor of this. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Kressler. Anyone else? Anyone from the dais? Alderman Maladra, and then Alderman Piper, then Alderman Vogelsberg.
This is a really tricky issue, but first I want to address some of your comments, Mr. Tamillo. I sensed from your comments sort of a us versus them perspective, Third Street versus the rest of the community, your store versus these outside events that are threatening your business and things like that, and that bothered me. I've been working with the community in one way or another since 1996, and I can't tell you the amount of energy that we put into thinking, planning, dreaming of ways to bring people downtown. And I feel strongly that all of that benefits businesses, short-term or long-term. You guys, you might experience a dip on the day of the event, as you've described. But I'm willing to bet dimes to donuts that you benefit in the long term. The fact is, it's not your store that puts Geneva on the map. It's a combination of things, efforts from the retailers, from the restaurateurs, from the city, from the chamber, from a whole lot of people. And so an event like this that's going to bring 2,000 new people downtown, maybe they'll remember your store specifically. Maybe they won't. They will remember the town and the community. And I think that's something that we need to keep in mind. Mike Simon, your comments about planning and the pace with which this is sort of being rushed in, I feel the same way. But a lot of the concerns that I hear focus on parking and how people are going to find their way around. I think parking is an issue. Whatever kind of event we have, if it's a large wedding, if it's a bike race, if it's a Swedish Days, people are going to compete for those parking spaces. So you can't come and tell me you don't want any kind of event. So pretty much on a Saturday, it's whatever you can find in terms of parking. And as far as I can tell, if they park north of the race and they have to walk by 10 shops to get to your shop, that's not a bad thing. That's a good thing. So I don't think shifting the race a block west is going to help the parking concerns that I've heard. I don't think making it wait another year is going to help those parking concerns. They'll be here next year. Same concerns, we'll be there again. So basically, I'm seeing an event that promises to bring people downtown. This is consistent with the efforts and activities that SPAC has had, that the city's had, that the chamber's had for, you know, 10 years that I've been working down here. I would like to talk to you guys in more detail about how events like this are bad for business, and we got to do some fine-tuning to see what we can do to make it better. I don't want to argue with you about that, but in terms of a community perspective, I'm having a hard time seeing the negatives. Thanks.
Thank you, sir. Alderman Piper, then Alderman Vogelsberg.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Matt, you're right. I know you take a parochial view, and I would too. If I was in your shoes, I'd be worried about my bills. But in the spot we're in, we can't. We got to look at it as a whole. And I know you want to discount the views of the restaurateurs and the views of the people on State Street. We can't. I can't in this spot. I guess I have a problem with the. On the one hand, you want to get all the retail folks together, and on the other hand, you want to discount some of the views of some of them. Well, we can't do that. You know, it's a difficult spot to be in because the six people that Paul rattled off, I said to Kevin today, you can walk into anybody's house on this council and point at the things that we've all bought from Mike. And it's unbelievable. I mean, Kendall and I spend, you know, a lot of time in the antique shop in the Berry House. I've been in your store. I mean, it's difficult when those are the places that you spend time in, and we know that you're against what's going on here. I think the big difference in what's going on with this particular event is this is not an art show. It's not a car show. We're not blocking these streets off to put brick down. We're not going to put retail in front of retail. This is not bringing with it hot dog carts and people selling things in the street. This is blocking people onto a sidewalk, and when those bikes go by, it's 2,000 people who have never been here before, and it's turn around and go inside and shop, look for something, go get something to eat. Maybe they don't buy something today, but I guarantee you they'll be back. I told Kevin today, my mother-in-law came down for Father's Day, showed up, said hello, dropped off a card, jumped in the car, went downtown and bought a chandelier. I saw her for 5 minutes. A chandelier she had seen 3 weeks before. She does this to me every time she shows up. You know, that's what she does. But that happens all the time. And I know nothing about bicycling, nothing. It doesn't have a motor. I'm not interested. I'm not pedaling anything. But apparently these guys were into it. This is their thing. And these things are expensive, and people come from all over the place. So it seems like this draws a lot of money and a lot of international people, and this would be the place to do it. You know, some of the concerns that have been brought up tonight, I mean, look, Bruce, you're behind, but you've also got a check in the game. I'm pretty sure the Bike Peg Committee is going to get a phone call tomorrow morning, and he's worked with them enough. I think this will be taken care of relatively quickly. The chief wants what he wants, and he usually gets what he wants. So I think that will be taken care of relatively quickly. I don't have a whole lot of concerns in that area. You know, very seldom do things get handed to us that are wrapped up this nicely. I agree. We've spent years planning all of the other events that were brought up, but those were events that we did from square one. When you talk about you know, our wine festival and our Christmas walk, those we did from scratch. Somebody has walked in and said, "Here's the information. Here's what we've done. This is all wrapped up for you." I don't think an event could be much simpler. They're not bringing anything to town but bicycles and fencing. When someone offers to park far away and ride their bike up, and then Paul comes in and says, "Yeah, here's where the parking decks are," we're really only blocking off, if you look at it, about 40 spaces on 3rd Street. And we're going to open it up to all the pedestrians and get everybody across the street. You know, I really think if we can try it, work with these guys on the stage, and I'll tell you something, make them put their money where their mouth is, Matt. Get out there and tell them, "This is where my store is. This is what I sell." Make him make the announcements. He says he's going to do it. Make him do it. Make them tell them, hey, I've got Italian pottery in here. I'm selling antiques in here. I've got the greatest selection of cufflinks in the Tri-Cities. Make him make the announcement. He said he'd do it. Let's make him do it. Let's see if it works. But I've never seen anything wrapped up this tight in this short period of time. I just haven't seen it before. And I think that's what's making us comfortable, or as comfortable as we're going to get. And, you know, Mike, your place is known internationally. It's difficult to not find it. And I think with the local volunteers, my 14-year-old can find the little traveler. So it's difficult to find a volunteer who can't point you to the traveler, can't point you to. And I think if we pair everybody up and get those maps out there, I think people are going to find it. I got my fingers crossed, but I really think this is going to work a lot better than people think it is. And I think if we bring 2,000 people who've never been here before, I've never brought anybody to town that didn't come back or come back specifically to shop. We've got people who lived here for a long time, moved to Calgary, are coming back for 4th of July, and have already said, don't make any plans, we're coming downtown. We need to spend a day downtown. We got things to pick up. So I think it's going to be a good thing. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Piper. Alderman Vogelsberg?
Thank you, Mayor. Well, I had a lot of the same thoughts as Alderman Piper, which is that we do have to look at the whole community. So if it is good for restaurants, that is good for the city. And the one thing that hasn't been mentioned is the heads and beds, which we do a lot of spending as a city to attract people to put them in the hotel rooms. And this, I think, will, because if the professional race doesn't start till 6, people will be sleeping over. So I think that those two things are a benefit. And, of course, I am hoping that it doesn't take a toll on the retail business. I think the weather is a big deterrent in downtown shopping, in my experience. But the other thing is, I think even though it's a short time frame, and I do believe events can be thrown together in a short time if that's all you're doing, but to me this is a bike race in a box. I mean, they have the race, and they're just looking for the place to put it, and we have to figure things out like the safety. But the little details seem like it's going to be, okay. And the only the thing I was worried about was the interval so people can cross the street, because when you first mentioned it, I really pictured 3rd Street completely blocked off, nothing happening. But if there are intervals so people can shop, come in and out, find each other, then I think that it is worth giving it a one-year try and not commit to any more, never commit to giving any money, since so many other organizations would like to have us sponsor things for them. And the only other two things I wanted to say is for the downtown businesses, I work at a store on Saturdays, and I think the biggest advocates of the businesses are the other businesses. People ask us all the time, where should I eat? Where can I get this? Where can I get this? Do you sell this? And we always give them the place to go. There's no kind of selfishness in the downtown retailers, I don't think. So I think that will be a helpful thing that day if everyone on 3rd Street gets together and says, let's make sure we man our own, protect our own, so to speak. A lot of times this has been said, money changing hands, and I just want to make it clear, the only money the city is getting is for services rendered. We don't give any events, public works, garbage cans, or police officers. We charge for all that. But that's it. We're not making any money on this. We're just hoping it puts a spotlight on the city to bring people back. Thank you.
Thank you, Alderman Vogelsberg. Anyone else from the dais? Is there anyone else in the audience? Oh, Alderman Singer, excuse me.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. It seems as if I'm the only one that hasn't yet commented on this issue. And I feel very strongly and very favorable towards the direction we're moving here. I think we've had a very open conversation in this regard. I think it's been marvelous that we've had people from the community attend this function to express their views. This is democracy at work. This is a marvelous thing we're having here today. Great discussion, and I'm very pleased about that. And in my mind, I had some issues, and I feel that one of the issues was the traffic issue, and I feel that it has been, in my mind, resolved. I think this event will be a great exposure to our community as well, so I feel that the long-term effect will certainly be beneficial to our community. And that's all I have to say, sir.
Thank you, Alderman Singer. Anyone else in the audience? Or Alderman Flanagan, then I'll recognize Mr. Garrison.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I guess I'm just going to kind of chime in and say that I agree with Alderman Maladra and Alderman Piper. I think that everything that they've said really has hit home, and I think we should give it a chance. Just, I've never been to one an experience like this. I think I'd like to see how it pans out, and how and I hope in all that if there's enough information that's being given out during the races, even though certain businesses may seem to have less foot traffic, I think in the long run, and it's been my experience, even if I've gone someplace else and I've seen something I want, I'll go back. So I know that if you have the right merchandise and you have the right exposure, I think you'll get the people that you need in, not maybe this time, but somewhere along the line. And I agree that when you have to look at the whole community, we have to do that. So I'm for it. I'm for trying it at least the one time. So thank you.
Anyone else in the dais before I recognize Mr. Garrison? Mr. Garrison? The younger Mr. Garrison.
Well, I'm not up here to point out the benefits and trying to sell anybody on that. I think that we kind of did that already, but I guess I'm up here just to thank everybody for all their time spent. I wanted to point out some of the concerns that were brought up and address them, though, and I wanted to address that we have spent 3.5 months from the first day to race day, which we feel that's plenty enough time to have conversation, to figure out the course, and to work through the logistics. In the next couple of weeks, we'll be working even harder. Our team's been up here 15 times, which has been absolutely incredible. We've brought 3 to 4 people every time, so we can take back knowledge. We've had at least 45 phone calls back and forth. So as far as the work and the hard work and ironing everything out, we've done the due diligence, in my opinion, with the city. As far as I wanted to point out, 68%, I know Evanston was brought up, and 68% of all spectators spent money having dinner or lunch in Evanston. 20% of all people that came into Evanston never been there before. And Evanston's a pretty, well-known city. As far as the volunteers go, I wanted to point out once again that Verizon Cycling Team has committed and will be on site that day, which they are seasoned volunteers. As far as the point that was made out several times that I wrote in my notes before you spoke was the residual benefit. This is one of 17 days. Throughout every day of the series, we're going to talk about where we went, where we're going next, what happened, what was so great about the city. And so on the website that we get tremendous volume, we're going to have our own link to the city as well. And, yes, I give my word because that's all I have, is that if businesses want to give us an index card to read about what they're doing that day or what their business is all about, and I have to keep it limited, we'll see how the day goes, but I'd be happy for business owners to come up on stage, talk about their business, talk about why they enjoy being in Geneva. And in closing, I guess the biggest thing is about our event, it is turnkey. We've been doing it for 42 years. We've got Otto here who started it. Some of our staff's been on staff for 20 years. And as far as doing the combination, and it's worked, of getting people to go shop, eat, spend money in the community. With the cross traffic, when bike riders go around, and there's 2-3 minute gap, and there's 10 laps in the race, and they're with their family, they say, you know what, let's go get something to eat. And then we'll be back and get to watch the rest of the race. Or, you know what, we watch our son racing, let's go shopping. He's going to be racing for a half hour, 45 minutes, let's catch the end of it. So it is a good point that it's not like another type of festival where it's an explosion and everything's kind of blocked. There's going to be full view. And again, so we have announcers that are going to promote the city, the restaurants, the stores, and we bring in high talent, and they get the word out. So again, in closing, I just want to thank everybody for the opportunity to present this. And yes, we believe in Geneva. We believe it's a perfect location for bike race. And talk about the never been here before. We've been here residually. We have spent money in the restaurants as well as the businesses, and we've enjoyed it. So thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Garrison. Is there anyone else for a second time? Welcome back.
You won less than last week.
No problem.
Matt Tamillo, again. It's just kind of amazing to me that we can sit here and listen to two gentlemen, one from the paper merchant and one from Michael Simon, who have probably combined over 70 years of experience in retail, both who have said very succinctly to all of us on two different occasions that this is going to hurt their business. I don't have that kind of experience on 3rd Street. I only have 6 years, but I can tell you it's also going to hurt mine. Now, those of us who are not merchants that know better than those of us do, I don't know what else to say about that. Your comments, sir, about we have to be everything to everybody, I agree. But I don't think the people on State Street would be happy for me voting in for their benefit as they're not voting for my benefit. They're not going to get affected by what happens on 3rd Street. I will. I belong to the Merchants Association. I am part of that and work very hard at it, behind the scenes and at it, to make something happen for all of us. If Geneva doesn't succeed, I don't succeed. It's very simple. So I'd like to take that out of all your minds with respect to that. The thing that kind of concerns me is that five of you have already said yes and we haven't voted yet. Okay, I understand that you feel positive about it. You have to convince me. We're here to talk to you guys about what our gut feel is. We're telling you, but five of you are telling me you don't really care what I say. You think this is the right thing to go with no planning, poor planning, or any planning. I have a problem with that. I've been in business for almost 50 years, and when you usually end up with a contract and a deal, it's something that works for both parties. If it's a one-way street, it usually doesn't work that way. And with you saying to me and to the other merchants on 3rd Street, you know what's better for me than I do, I've got nothing else to say other than thank you for your time.
You're not the only merchant on 3rd Street.
Then excuse me, sir, whoever said that.
Me.
Ask the rest of them then. Serenity, who was on the corner across the street from Graham's. I walked up to her husband today. I said, are you coming to the meeting tonight? What meeting? It's about, I don't know what you're talking about. That's right across the street from Graham's on the corner of Franklin and 3rd. I have heard one of these two gentlemen tell me now on two occasions they've been here 15 times. In those 15 times, they could have visited every merchant on 3rd Street. You haven't. I haven't.
No, I haven't.
But they said they were going to. And they said initially when they came here, they were going to visit merchants and they were going to visit residents. At this point in time, my comments are somewhat irrelevant and I'm not here to get into an argument with you. You have an opinion. I have an opinion. I would like to be on 3rd Street for another 15 years. If business is the way it is, I can almost guarantee everybody sitting here and the people in the audience, the way it's going, you will have less and less retail businesses open on 3rd Street. Whether it be downtown, wherever, we are not generating any income. We are not bringing funds to this town for whatever reason, probably because of the economy, but everything else is not helping. It hasn't helped 3 years ago when the economy wasn't bad. I have a real hard time believing that on July 10th, this is going to make all the difference in the world to me. I hope I'm wrong. I will come back here and apologize to all of you if I am. But I just hope I am. I really do. I really appreciate your time and listening, and thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Tamillo.
Carol Vandenbroek again from the Geneva Antique Market in the Berry House.
We knew nothing about this. We were never contacted by anyone. The only way I heard about it was the City of Geneva newsletter. We are primarily infected by this, and no one bothered to contact us. So that answers his question, your question.
Thank you. Anyone else from the audience? From the dais? We have two members of the City Council absent this evening. We have eight members who are charged with voting either aye or nay. In order to move this program forward, six affirmative votes are required. Questions, comments? Chief, whoever's horn that is, find them.
Yes.
$25,000.
It might be you.
It might be. I rode my bike.
Uh-huh. Oh, gosh.
That's why I'm.
And just to be certain, ladies and gentlemen, the motion offered, motions are always in the affirmative. So an aye vote is to support this initiative. So we are voting on the approval of this event.
Can the question be called?
Dr. Brown, first.
Why does it require six and not just a majority of the quorum?
Well, that is it requires the majority of those holding office. The city attorney and I discussed this prior to the meeting.
Because of what detail? Because it's a use of city property? Or?
Well, you're talking about closure of streets and utilization of city services.
So it requires a majority of the elected officials.
Correct.
Thank you.
Of the alderman holding office.
As soon as the clerk flips the 17th tape around.
Got it.
Mr. Clerk, please take the roll call.
Robert Piper.
Aye.
Ron Singer.
Aye.
Don Vogelsberg.
Aye.
Chuck Brown.
Aye.
Dorothy Flanagan.
Aye.
Sam Hill.
Nay.
Greg Maladra.
Aye.
Richard Marks.
Nay.
The motion passes. Six affirmative votes. Two opposed. This matter has been discussed and is decided. Thank you all for your participation. We appreciate it. We move on to new business, ladies and gentlemen. Any new business from any member of the audience?
I have one, Mr. Mayor. Oh.
If nobody in the audience has any new business, I'll recognize Alderman Hill.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
I hope that I'm proven wrong on this, on the vote that I just made. But in order to, an attempt to help the downtown merchants on 3rd Street who are, in their opinion, are going to not have as much business as they would normally have, I'd like to create another race. And I challenge you, Mr. Mayor,
good God,
to race me in a bicycle race.
No, don't do
on
it.
The route, sometime during that day to be determined.
Frank, don't write this down, for God's sake, because it ain't never going to happen.
Our certificate of liability just skyrocketed.
Yeah. Well, and at the end, we will go to visit each one of these merchants who have objected and make sure that we have a little bit of a crowd following us and perhaps take a sip of our favorite non-alcoholic beverage. And,
if I'm riding with you, I'm going to go back on the wagon. I'll tell you what.
So that's my comment and my challenge.
I'll ride with you anytime.
All right, thank you. I do need 3 weeks, 3 days of, three weeks, 3 weeks? Wait a minute. Three blocks of advantage because of my age.
Deal.
All right, thank you.
Deal.
One time around.
Deal.
Hope we live through
it. Maybe a better shop first.
Any other new business from any member of the council? Hearing none? From the audience, seeing, hearing none, a motion to adjourn is in order.
So moved.
Second.
Motion by Piper, seconded by Singer. All in favor, please indicate by saying aye.
Aye.
Anyone opposed? Anyone abstain? Excellent. Good night, everyone. Thank you.
Thank you.